This is an open meeting. It's not a closed meeting. Well, I can't see why you can't have documents. Is there an embargo on the documents from the department side?
No.
Say no embargment. Yes. And, if there's no embargo on the document, it's a public open meeting. Anyone from the South African public can attend this meeting. So I've got no problem with this. No problem from the members. I put the apologies to the committee. Can I get responses, please?
Understandable.
There's a proposer, a seconder. For the apologies. No problem. Covered. All the members, this committee, as well as the Select Committee on Appropriation, engaged with municipalities since November 2009, when we came here in May. Our first visit was to Mpumalanga, if I recall correctly, in November 2009. And throughout the years, this formed part of our strategic plan and work, dealing with the fiscal framework of local government issues, but also service delivery. When we met municipalities in the province, it was not only the meeting with the municipalities, but it was also a meeting with all the stakeholders, working with municipalities like the National and Provincial Departments of COCTA, Treasury, ESCOM, Energy, Public Works, and so we can go on. It was actually a mass meeting. And some of the issues during that week of engagement, because we always set aside the week, we listened to the issues, we did analysis before meeting the municipalities, our research units, and we address issues on the spot. For example, when you break for tea or lunch, then in the evening, municipalities met with departments to get a grip on issues and try to resolve it. Others were long-term action plans. That was our way of working. Throughout our engagement, we dealt with municipalities under Section 139, where administrators were deployed to those municipalities. And in some cases, when the administrator left, the situation didn't change very much. Given that history, looking at the report of the Auditor General that was tabled this year, the analysis by National Treasury that appears on a frequent basis, here it is, this latest one was the 3rd of June, 2013, and analysis made by the FSC, the Financial and Fiscal Commission. And all our reports that were stable and adopted in the National Council of Provinces during that history. Referring to Section 154 of the Constitution, the national and provincial departments must assist provincial and local government to deliver in terms of their mandate. Where are we today? That's why this meeting was called. We had an engagement with the previous Deputy Minister of COCTA, Honorable Karim, where he told this committee it will take 10 years to get to a clean audit, every one of the municipalities in the country. That was in 2011. What is the role of Parliament, through its committees, and the provincial legislators? And that we emphasized throughout, to be more active and to be more proactive, not just to set a lesson what you actually do. after your resolutions have been adopted, the follow-ups. That's where I are today. So with that background to the department, thank you for being here, honoring this this meeting. I hand over to the DG. Your microphone, please. It's a small button somewhere there on the panel. I say.
Thank you, sir. My apologies. Good morning again. Shanaz Majid from the Department of Cooperative Governance. I'm the Deputy Director General, sir. A formal apology from my Director General, Mr. Vusi Madonsela, who is assisting the ministers today and asked me to lead our delegation here. We have spoken to the Secretary Chairperson, and with your permission, the sequencing of our two inputs, we would like Treasury to go first and then ourselves. I am here, Honorable Chair, with a broader team made up of our national department, together with colleagues from three provinces, Mpumalanga, Northwest, as well as KwaZulu-Natal. And hence, we are ready to make a very comprehensive presentation to the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Treasury.
Mr. Chairman, I'm pleased that the DG is here, but I'm concerned. We haven't got the Minister, we don't have the Deputy Minister, and we don't have the DG. When was this invitation sent to the Department to come and do this presentation? And I think that it's incumbent upon someone. I mean, we've sent delegations away for not having the DG here before. And we're now simply accepting that the DDG can do this. Could I have more information about why these people aren't here and how long ago our invitation was sent?
I must just take you back when we dealt with the apologies. The apologies were accepted. So in terms of that, we actually made a ruling that we will continue because I asked the question. We dealt with that. I understand the question of Honorable Lees.
Chairman, I didn't understand that there was an apology from the DG at that point.
No, the Director General. Can the department please explain?
So, yes. The department have had a long-standing engagement with hosting some international guests. Today, the DG is overseeing an important engagement with those international guests that our ministers have given permission for as well. So from just a diary management point of view in trying to ensure that we meet all our important obligations and give it the necessary respect, it's regrettable our DG very much wanted to be here. We could not cancel that important international engagement because of all of the implications that would go with such a decision. So our DG, you know, very much would have preferred to be here. Our DG have consistently honored all other committee engagements and as a rule prioritize that. And it's really unfortunate that the diary have panned out in such a particular way. And it's a very sincere apology. It's no disrespect to this committee.
I believe what the Deputy DG is telling me, because I know you and I know your style of work. But in future, if this might occur again, then the chairperson and the secretary of the committee must be told in advance what is the situation. I don't want to hear it when I step through the door to my chair to chair a meeting. I think that's a correct way of dealing with the issues. That's part of the task for the Minister of Public Administration when she goes to workshops that she wants to implement. we will deal with that as well with that specific minister. So my ruling is that we go on with this meeting because it's an important issue. We're off to Gauteng next week to engage the National Council of Provinces with the whole administration in that province, in a specific area around Tshwane. So that's why this meeting is more important, to prepare us for going there, to see what you have done, because we're going to engage with stakeholders and local government as well, and service delivery issues. That's how serious these meetings are. So thank you for your feedback, but please take it back to your department and secretary that we write a letter to the leadership of this department. Referring to what I've just said. Treasury.
Morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Skalk Liman. I'm from National Treasury and currently the Acting Accountant General, and I'm accompanied by my colleague, Talita Kosa, who's heading the Financial Recovery Service. Thank you very much for this opportunity, and we want to be very brief, providing the context how the Treasury and DECOC collaborates in this area. And I think it will suffice to start to say that one section 139 is one too many, and as a Treasury we have expressed on a number of...
Sorry, just hold your word. Yes, sir.
I thought I know the Accountant General. And is he saying Accountant General or Accounting General?
Yes. What's acting Accountant General, sir.
Accounting General.
Mr. Nombalu has been moved somewhere else.
Okay.
I forgot where he is, but he has been shifted.
Mr. Nombalu, my predecessor and previous supervisor, is currently the CEO of CETA. And I'm standing in until the Minister of Finance is appointed permanent Accountant General. With your permission, sir, I think, as you alluded already, that the Treasury is concerned about sustained financial finances for government, and specifically for local governments. The presentation that we have distributed, and it's in front of you, honourable members, really is a very short one to supplement what's to follow by DECOC, and we've collaborated in what we would like to present to you today. So without further ado, you're probably all aware that Section 139 is linked with the Municipal Finance Act, making provision for the recovery of recovery services when finance doesn't go right in a municipality. The principles is that it starts off as the responsibility of the municipality. A province has the powers to intervene if necessary, and then there's mandatory actions that may be taken. The Treasury has in the past tried to be a bit more proactive through the Finance Management Improvement Program. We will elaborate a little bit later on this, currently supporting more or less 70 municipalities. And the focus is preventative action. As I've mentioned, it is a sad occasion when a municipality ends up in a Section 139 situation. I'd like to go to the third slide, if I may, Chairperson. Just giving a little bit of background where this originated. When the MFMA was promulgated in 2003, 10 years ago, there was an amendment to the Constitution to provide for Section 139, and some of you were involved in that process where joint seatings between justice, local government, and the Treasury eventually ended up in these provisions. More notably, provision is made for financial management recovery service. And that is unfortunately when things have gone very wrong and there needs to be a turnaround strategy in place. The recovery service is based on hardcore financial elements. It's dealing with the ability to raise revenue, its ability to budget accurately, it's the ability of a municipality to link those budgets to meaningful strategic and operational plans, and the ability to get this through the legal process of budget adoption by council. The background on slide 4 mainly directs which legislative framework is applicable from the MFMA side, more particularly section 137 of the MFMA, providing the legal basis for intervention depending on the specific financial crisis in that particular municipality. Chairperson, there has been several interventions since 1994, and in a DECOG slide, a thorough presentation on the status of these will be provided. Some notable examples would be Maribeng, Nsunduzi, Bushbuck Ridge. We are concerned that many of these interventions have not been successful in the long run due to a couple of reasons. The first, yes sir, Nola, is another good point in case. At the root cause of this, and I'm quite sure that the DECOG will supplement this, is a few basics. And we are concerned that we are not crossing, or we're not dealing with the basic issues, namely the appointment of competent and capable staff. Finance is the exact science. And from the finance perspective, technically, it should not that be hard to drive the budget of a municipality. Finding and retaining those skills seems to be a big issue. This committee might be well aware of the minimum competency regulations that's been in effect for the last 7 years and the lack of progress that we've made in this area. A second major intervention is the sustainability of these recovery plans. Although a lot of effort is put into the formulation of these plans, the execution is found wanting. The quality thereof and the long-term sustainability is compromised by inflating budgets, very often predicting an inaccurate revenue base, and it is unfortunate, therefore, then that the result won't be sustainable because the numbers are not credible. And these are compromises that hinders successful recoveries in Section 139. I think we also need to note, Chairperson, that there has been a lot of good work that's maybe underreported. The work that COCTA has done with the MISA, as well as the Municipal Finance Improvement Program, is a lot more proactive in nature. Where vulnerable municipalities are identified, financial plans and building sustainable institutional capacity are dealt with in a very systemized process, starting with planning and budgeting, right through to the reporting components, as well as follow-up and audit action plans. And I think there is a lesson to be learned in the coherence how this process has started and ended and results in sustained financial management. I think I should also note that the Treasury is currently finalizing a program on financial indicators, a set of 32 indicators specifically developed for public sector that will enhance our ability to proactively complement the early warning system that is proposed in the bill, so that we can fast-track interventions where necessary and not react when the inevitable happens, but be a bit more proactive. These 32 indicators is the result of a one-year research program. It's based on the principle of financial ratios that is indicative of financial health. We hope to conclude this process by the end of this year and bring that also to your attention for consultation. Chairperson,
the financial management improvement support program currently supports 70 municipalities. It assists with the institutional changes where it's required in the budget and treasury office at a municipality. It is linked to the service delivery and budget plans. It focuses on developing capacity and provides technical assistance where it's required from a financial management perspective. In conclusion, Chair, I think for a meaningful debate today, and I'm quite sure in the presentation that will follow by DCOG is also explicitly mentioned, we acknowledge that the interventions have not always gone to plan. Due to the fact that the plans are not structured enough, the conditions are not conducive for long-term follow-through. We will also have to acknowledge that there has been sometimes a lack of joint oversight and forcing accountability. When I say joint, I mean between the treasuries, national and provincial, and maybe DCOG. One of our recommendations that we might want to consider joint committees. But more importantly, Chair, I think planning such an intervention is just one aspect. The effective implementation of it is totally a different ballgame. And at the Treasury at the moment, we are thinking and considering ways how we can improve our institutional turnaround, providing more depth and return. It's a viable option to have an administrator, but we think we need to have strong institutional arrangements at municipalities as the hallmark of good financial management. With those few observations, Chair, I think it would give you the backdrop of the Treasury's position. We believe that Section 139s are too many, that it's not been sustained, that we need to do more to ensure sustained good financial management, and that the collaboration between ourselves and DCOG has taken good measures in preparing this bill. Our inputs have been taken into account as far as the finance components are concerned, which we find very constructive, and that we hope that this debate could end up in sustained financial management improvement at municipalities. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you to Mr. Immans from the National Treasury. We had this year our second exercise. We started last year calling it the Local Government Week in the National Council of Provinces, which went very well. And it was highlighted the issue in provincial departments, also through our engagement with municipalities in the different provinces. We covered six. The capacity in provincial departments of Treasury and provincial departments of COCTA. That's a serious issue. To go and implement the action plans as it is stated in the APP of that department submitted to the provincial legislator to comply with their own action plan. The then former Minister of COCTA passed away, made a statement and gave a briefing in the old assembly chambers regarding the task teams in regions. They are one thing. The action plan is 100%, but it's the implementation and the warm bodies to go and do the work. And that's why it's important that we again look at Section 154 of the Constitution before we get to 139. Did we comply with what is standing in Section 154? Can it be done? Yes or no? If it can't be done, then we must put measures in place to get the work be implemented at grassroots level. To the Department of COCTA, Deputy DG, you're welcome to address the meeting.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Committee.
We're going to take the questions after the, according to agenda, except if the committee wants to engage now with Treasury. new authority. Okay.
Respect of the bill that he's talking about here, because I'm seeing it talks to 139, but almost a similar situation is at the provincial level, in the section 100, that there's nothing. Is it purely only going to be for municipalities only, then we're going to expect a totally new bill for provincial departments? What's going to happen?
Because it will be a joint venture drafting this bill or amending the bill.
Chair, that is correct. We have a few slides that specifically unpack the bill and how Section 100 and 139 link together. So if the Honourable Member would give us an opportunity, that's a core part of our presentation, and maybe your specific questions can be elaborated on there, if that's okay, Chair. Honourable...
We're giving you time until 11:15. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Chair, the way we've structured our presentation for you, I will deal with the first part just, and then we would want to get each province here, KwaZulu-Natal first, to lead from slide 9 onwards. We will then have our HOD for Northwest speak to the contextual issues around the issues and the support in Northwest. And then our colleague Basie Strauss will speak to Mpumalanga. Then my colleague will talk about the work that we've done in partnership on the bill, what are the issues between Section 139 and 100, and we'll also want to reflect on some lessons learned to date and how that informs the bill, and some broader support measures. That's been the structure of our presentation, and we will stick to our time limitation. So getting straight into it, Chairperson, we note on slide 4 that there are different kinds of interventions, just explaining or reminding us of the obvious there, that we're familiar what the stance is of the Constitution in terms of making these interventions making these interventions a possibility and how it should be executed. It's important to note that Section 139 provides for general intervention in instances where municipality failed to fulfill the execution of its obligations, and we also note that Section 139 Part 4 provides for instances where municipality fails to approve the budget, and hence the important connection that Skalk have already pointed out, and the conditions for mandatory and obligatory intervention there. We also note the Section 139 subsection 5 that provide for intervention in instances where municipalities fail due to their financial affairs, again invoking mandatory obligation. So the current Section 139 interventions that we have in the country essentially is made up of either a combination or where there's primarily governance failure, or a combination of governance and financial failure, and often compounded with service delivery failures. That seems to be the three broad categories of dysfunction that seems to happen in municipalities, either a cocktail of all of them to varying degrees of crisis that have happened over that have been allowed to happen over time, that culminates in the undesirable intervention then of 139. And we also want to note up front that it's sometimes because our weak monitoring failed to pick up the early indications of a municipality in distress, and hence the very important point about how the bill wants to try and respond to being more proactive and the tightening up the early warning systems. Honourable Committee, the current interventions on slide 7 tells us in KwaZulu-Natal we will hear more detail of the four Section 139 interventions currently in progress. We will also hear more about the three interventions in terms of the Municipal Finance Management Act, Section 136 in particular, where there's three municipalities in that category. In the Eastern Cape, we've got one municipality currently under administration, as listed there. In Mpumalanga, two, and in Northwest, three. We also want to share with the committee that recently the Portfolio Committee on Local Government and Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs undertook an oversight visit to Northwest as well, where some of these very hard issues around 139 was tackled. I now just want to pause briefly, Chair, and ask my colleague Sheetal Maharaj from KwaZulu-Natal to get into the depths of what's the story in KwaZulu-Natal, what's the issues that live there, and the particular support interventions.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chair, and honourable members, colleagues. I just want to mention at the outset that we actually have 5 municipalities under 139, Matuba-Tuba included. So I will take you through all of the interventions, starting with Ndaka Municipality, which is one of the oldest interventions, and all of those interventions have been implemented in terms of Section 139(1)(b) of the Constitution, where the provincial executive has assumed functions in those municipalities. As was indicated earlier, there appears to be a cocktail of issues in KZN. The thread that is coming through is that governance has a serious impact on service delivery, and governance has a serious impact on all aspects of the administration, financial management, performance management, and that appears to be one of our most serious problems. At Ndaka Municipality, in previous financial years, there were serious deficiencies in financial management systems, accounting and financial controls. The AG issued qualified audit opinions in respect of 3 consecutive financial years, and the council was consistently failing to address these issues. As reflected in the AG report, which was made available to us in the 2007 and 8 financial year, and the committee will please bear with me, I'm setting the backdrop which led to the intervention in 2009. The municipality had experienced serious financial problems evident from the poor cash flow and an accumulated deficit of about 8.4 million, which was incurred as of June 2008. So clearly there were serious financial problems at this municipality. And despite the municipality being very heavily grant dependent, the municipality had appointed 7 Section 57 managers, excluding the municipal manager. So it was a very heavy top structure. They were heavily grant dependent, and salary costs incurred by Ndaka amounted to 51% of the total operating expenditure of this municipality. One of the serious problems also is the exercise of oversight of the municipal council over the administration, and also performance management, which was seriously lacking. And this was evident in the over-expenditure on the budget and poor grant management. The municipality was not implementing an effective debt collection and credit control policy, and this was evidenced in the increasing outstanding debt. So as a result of all of these challenges, the serious financial crisis, the lack of oversight at the municipality, poor performance management, the Provincial Executive Council resolved to intervene in Ndaka Municipality in November 2009. This intervention is still in place. There has been considerable progress in terms of the financial viability and financial management of the municipality. They are currently financially stable. There is no longer a deficit. There's lots of money in the bank. But what we're focusing now on as a province is the expenditure of this money. We want to implement projects, we want the municipality to remain sustainable, and therefore the intervention has been extended on numerous occasions by the Provincial Executive Council. What remains a challenge for the municipality is oversight and performance management, which we are currently providing support to the municipality. And I will talk about support that we are intending and have already provided to Ndaka Municipality. With regard to performance management, because of the lack of proper performance management systems and processes being implemented, the municipality still is in the red in respect of meeting its constitutional objectives in some areas. The department has undertaken an exercise in terms of which a system has been developed, an electronic system has been developed to monitor and evaluate performance of municipalities. It's basically an electronic performance management system and a tool, and we've piloted it in 3 municipalities, and we've looked at which is the best system, and we will be implementing and rolling that out in Ndaka municipality shortly. With regard to Matuba municipality, also serious financial issues. The municipality was subject to a discretionary intervention in terms of Section 136 of the MFMA for a period of 3 months. There was a financial recovery plan in place, but as a result of the, I would say, non-cooperation of the municipality, it looked like the prospect of success of that discretionary intervention would have been not very good. The municipality, for various reasons, was then put under or subject to Section 1391B intervention. Some of the reasons, including that the municipality had failed to appoint a service provider timely to undertake the compilation of the valuation role, the second general valuation role. As a result, the municipality was incurring losses in terms of property rates income. The municipality had failed to conduct performance assessments on senior managers, but more than just performance assessments, the whole performance management system of the municipality was not functional. The council had entered into unsustainable contracts. They were unable to pay creditors. The MPAC was not functional, the Municipal Public Accounts Committee was not functional. So basically the municipality was failing in various respects, and there was a failure to fulfill various executive obligations. So for that reason, the Provincial Executive Council resolved to intervene in terms of 1391B at Matuba Tuba. The municipality is currently subject to Section 1391B. A recovery plan is in place which has specific indicators that talks to key performance areas in governance, finance, performance management, and that recovery plan is being implemented with the support of a, we wouldn't call it an administrator, but a ministerial representative. He's an expert in the local government field, and who is busy supporting the municipality with implementing that recovery plan. Mbabazan Municipality. Okay, at Mbabazan Municipality, here there is one of the critical issues was the aspect of governance, and I'd like to take you through my entire report that I've drafted on Mbabazan, but that would take me a long time. So I'm just going to say that in KZN, I'm sure the committee is aware that some municipalities are considered hung councils. That's a council where no particular political party has a majority, an outright majority. So in some of these hung councils, two political parties then formed a coalition, and governance is then in terms of that coalition. Governance is then run in terms of that coalition. And I'm sure you're also aware of the MOU between the ANC and the NFP. And we've got 22 councils which are run by this coalition. At Mbabazan Municipality, we have that set of circumstances. It is a coalition municipality. We've had governance challenges in that municipality with motions of no confidence in the mayor, the deputy mayor, speaker, so on and so forth. And we've had instances where unlawful meetings took place, council meetings or purportedly took place, and unlawful decisions were then taken. Those unlawful decisions then led to a situation where there was a serious impact on all of the decisions in the municipality, including the employment of senior managers, conclusion of contracts, so on and so forth. And as a result of the state of illegality that prevailed in that municipality, governance was being challenged, council was not meeting, and in terms of the Structures Act, a council must meet at least quarterly. That was not happening. There were various walkouts, and this led to a situation where the municipality was basically dysfunctional. And for that reason, the Executive Council then was of the view that in order to restore functionality of the municipality and to ensure that all executive obligations are met, particularly that they meet and they take decisions, the Executive Council then resolved to intervene at Mbabazane Municipality. I'll then move on to Abakalusi Municipality. The reasons for the intervention at Abakalusi are primarily financial. The municipality received a disclaimer audit opinion for the 11-12 financial year, regressing from a previous unqualified audit opinion, highlighting significant deficiencies in financial management, performance management, and compliance with laws and regulations. The municipality didn't raise accounts for interest on arrears as required by the MFMA, and there was no council resolution to grant an exemption from charging interest as required by the Act. There was non-compliance with numerous SA standards of GRAP. I'm not going to go into them, but there was non-compliance. One of the other critical issues for the province was the fact that this municipality did not have a municipal manager. And in fact, there was no one even acting for more than a month as the municipal manager. They didn't have a top structure. There were no Section 56 managers. And we engaged the municipality as the department to support them, to provide them with capacity at that level so that they can, you know, play catch-up in respect of some issues. And that was refused or not accepted. Abakalusi Municipality, also the backdrop of this municipality, is also a coalition, and as a result of, I suppose, some conflict, political conflict or differences, this municipality was in serious trouble, and it was having an impact on service delivery. For that reason, the Executive Council resolved to intervene at Abakalusi Municipality. There is a recovery plan that is in place that talks to the audit outcome and that addresses the capacity constraints of the municipality and highlights the filling of critical posts as one of the priority indicators. We then move to Mvoti Municipality, which is one of our most recent interventions. And the history of Mvoti Municipality is also quite complex. There's been continuous struggle and instability in respect of governance stemming from political differences and power plays in this municipality. In fact, we have a situation currently at this municipality where two people regard themselves as speaker. There is no mayor, and two sets of councillors regard themselves as the executive committee. The council is not functional, or was not functional. There were walkouts, leaving the council in quorate, which was impacting on the decision-making process, for example, the approval of the budget, the IDP, and other critical statutory obligations. And these problems persisted, and there's a string of litigation at this municipality. There has been since 2011 between political parties, office bearers, and this was having a serious impact on service delivery, as I said, because critical decisions were not being taken and something had to be done. They were failing to fulfill their executive obligations to review the IDP, to implement projects, so on and so forth, and for that reason the Executive Council resolved to intervene at Mvoti Municipality to put a recovery plan in place which talks to the stability of council and the roles and responsibilities of office bearers. I'm not sure whether I need to go into the support currently being provided. Okay, in all of these municipalities, ministerial representatives, we don't call them administrators because we've not resolved the council, so we've put in place ministerial representatives with specific terms of reference, which talks to the turnaround of this municipality. In each municipality, assessments have been conducted to ascertain what the specific challenges are. Based on those challenges, recovery plans have been put in place, and those recovery plans are driven by the ministerial representatives. There are monthly project management meetings or intervention meetings where Treasury, ourselves, the ministerial representatives and all line functionaries in ACOCTA are briefed on the progress with the recovery plan by the ministerial representative and the municipal manager. We unblock challenges, we put challenges on the table, support plans are then drafted or crafted based on the progress with those recovery plans. Where municipalities have lacked senior management capacity or don't have a municipal manager, we've supported the municipality with facilitating secondments of senior managers, directors, technical services, CFOs, municipal managers. But also what's been critical for us is the filling of those posts, and there are action plans for each of these municipalities to fill the critical posts. All municipalities under intervention have either benefited from already or are due to benefit from what we call a governance expert, because as you see, governance remains a critical challenge in these municipalities, and the governance expert is in place to ensure that council meets, council is functional, that oversight is implemented and is effective or effected, that all portfolio committees are in place, that reporting mechanisms are also in place, and that the whole system of governance is operational. We've also attempted to support these municipalities. We're in the process of supporting these municipalities with performance management, because that also remains a challenge, or is a challenge, comes up as a challenge in intervention municipalities. And the department has piloted, as I said earlier, an electronic performance management system in three municipalities, being Big Five, Mshezi, and Mdoni. Those are not intervention municipalities. But what we are doing is that we want to perfect or use the best system and then implement that system in those municipalities, intervention municipalities that require performance management support the most. So currently, that is where we're at. And thank you.
Are there success stories?
Chair, there are success stories in terms of those that have been closed out. There are success stories in respect of these interventions themselves, because there's been considerable progress with regard to the recovery plans and those indicators. For example, municipalities like Ndaka, which was under serious financial distress, no longer is in financial distress. They are very financially viable. As I said, there's money in the bank. Revenue management is at a point where we want it to be. But the focus now in respect of the intervention is the implementation of capital projects and sustainability. So as much as, you know, you'd get the municipality to a point where, you know, revenue management is fine, collection rate is fine, there's money in the bank, grant management is fine, but we also want the implementation of a sustainable exit strategy. And that's where we're at with Ndaka. We've closed our previous interventions at Umhlabi Ilingana Municipality, Okashlamba Municipality, and Msunduzi. Although the colleagues from National Treasury will know that there are still challenges at Msunduzi, but it's a work in progress and there are plans in place. So there are success stories. I unfortunately have not brought all of the details in terms of the indicators that the recovery plan includes, but I can tell you that with regard to governance, at Mbabazan Municipality, as I indicated, council was not meeting. There were walkouts. Decisions were not being taken. And then immediately subsequent to the intervention, council is functional, portfolio committees are functional, decisions are being taken and implemented. And the work that needs to be done now is to undo all of the illegality that took place when the unlawful decisions were taken, and that is where we at with Mbabazan. So yes, there's success stories. There's a lot of progress in terms of all of these interventions. Specifically, where financial issues were indicated, there's been a lot of progress. With regard to governance, I think governance is a little bit more tricky and a little bit more difficult to deal with administratively. But I can report that these councils are functional. They are meeting, other than Mvoti, which is embroiled in a lot of litigation currently. But we're hopeful that the litigation, once it's concluded, will resolve some of the issues at Mvoti. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thanks. We're moving straight on to our Northwest team. It's led by our head of department, Mr. Monapula Motlogelo. Please lead us, Chief.
I just want to inquire why we haven't dealt with Umzinyathi, Utugela, and those.
Sorry, it's an omission. Sorry about that. I can deal with it now. Thank you. Okay, very quickly, and I think perhaps the reason why is those three municipalities are subject to 136 discretionary interventions in terms of the MFMA. And as indicated on the slides, with regard to Umzinyathi, there were both governance and financial challenges, Utukela as well, and with Ugu as well, but particularly financial challenges, and hence the discretionary intervention in terms of 136. With regard to governance at Umzinyathi Municipality, the appointment of staff was not conducted in line with the recruitment policy of the municipality, resulting in not suitably qualified staff being employed and the appointment of a consultant as a CFO. The failure to comply with a directive issued by the provincial executive in relation to the municipality's obligations with regard to Utukela Water. But the main reasons for the discretionary intervention at Umzinyathi was as a result of the financial distress. There was a lack of budgetary control, which was evident from the income and expenditure statement for 11-12 financial year, which was reflecting over expenditure. There was material discrepancies between the Section 71 report figures for the 11-12 financial year and figures in the financial statements, and non-payment for services rendered by Utukela Water. With regard to Utukela District Municipality, there was a disclaimer. They've obtained disclaimer audit opinion 11-12 financial year, which highlighted significant deficiencies in financial management, including insufficient cash to cover operations, under-budgeting, discrepancies between the Section 71 report figures and figures in the financial statements, unspent conditional grants of 126 million, irregular expenditure amounting to 14.6 million, and weak budgetary control, which resulted in unauthorized expenditure of 62.147 million. Disaster relief fund of 4 million was not spent for the purpose, and there was an inability of the municipality to pay its creditors. Inability of the municipality to pay its creditors is a common thread with all three 136 interventions. With regard to governance, there was a failure to ensure that the municipality was structured and organized in the manner that would be suitable to undertake its constitutional objectives. With regard to Ugu District Municipality, the AG's report for 11-12 financial year highlighted that municipality regressed from an unqualified audit opinion to a qualified audit opinion. There was unauthorized expenditure of 45 million, irregular expenditure of 18.4 million, and the current liabilities, or at the time the liabilities exceeded current assets, and conditional grants were not cash-backed. There were 134 cases of deviations of the SCM regulations, high salary and overtime costs. The ratio of the current assets to current liabilities was below the norm of 2:1. Failure to pay creditors within 30 days and loans totaling an amount of 285 million. With regard to governance, there were numerous changes in the top management with middle managers in critical posts. So with regard to the three discretionary interventions or 136 interventions, the issues related to serious financial problems and an inability of the municipality to deal adequately with those serious financial problems. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members.
Introduce yourself.
Yes, your
mic is with you.
Thank you, Chair. Your mic is on. Okay. Thank you. My name is Monnapula Motohalo. I'm the head of Department for Local Government and Traditional Affairs in the Northwest. The three municipalities that I'll briefly update the committee on are Makwazi Hills, Matwasana, and Ditsobotla. Just commencing with Makwazi Hills, the Provincial Executive Council invoked Section 1391B in April 2013. The intervention is still in progress. Key issues that led to the intervention were mainly poor governance and mismanagement of council matters by council itself, the infighting of councillors, which grossly affected the administration and service delivery in the area, with a specific poor relationship between the mayor and the speaker, at most instances not at talking terms, and making it even difficult to discuss council agenda for the efficiency of council meetings. The poor leadership and oversight by council on administration, as well as the breach of code of conduct by councillors. Some councillors, if the speaker convenes meeting, they do not attend. Others attend only when they are called by the mayor, and as a result, code of conduct of councillors is contained in Schedule 1 of the Structures Act is absolutely not adhered to. There was also deterioration of service delivery and expenditure of conditional grants or no money for value expenditure, and the general poor administrative leadership with vacancy rate on Section 56 managers. Just a brief progress on Makwazi Hills. The administrator and the team commenced their work in April, despite the challenges that I will reflect later. The administrator has been able to put advertisements for the positions that are all vacant, and shortlisting will be taking place on the 16th of September, followed by interviews to fill four senior management positions. The municipal manager, who was very problematic, has now been put on suspension by the administrator, and the administrator is working closely with the Hawks on other matters that are bordering on criminal intent and violation of applicable prescripts. The next municipality that we will deal with is Ditsobotla. Ditsobotla local municipality had a very serious problem of governance and infight of councillors, which led to the former mayor, who was reinstated later by the court, removed by the speaker and another group in council of councillors, later reinstated by the High Court. As a result, poor leadership oversight over administration. During the removal of the current mayor, who was now reinstated by judgment, the mayor at that time, for that period, appointed the municipal manager together with council irregularly, without MEC's concurrence and without meeting the necessary competencies. This breach of code of conduct by councillors, lack of attendance on scheduled meetings, and there's also poor relations between the administration in the form of the municipal manager and the mayor, not even reporting to the mayor, but the municipal manager reporting to the speaker according to the assessment concluded and the mayor's version. Deterioration of service delivery, experiencing sporadic protests and communities blockading roads for lack of service delivery, and general poor administrative leadership due to lack of capacity of senior managers as well as the competency of the municipal manager. In both Makwazi Hills and Ditsobotla, we had deployed a five-member team of multidisciplinary skills ranging from finance, engineering, strategic operations, labor relations, and general support to council. This five-member team constitutes not consultants but contracted employees of the department who are paid at the level of director and the chief director for the purpose of the administrators. So that is not an open-ended book for consultants to be in the municipality forever. Appointed for 6 months and they both have a implementation delivery plan with clear deliverables and targets. They report monthly to the department, and we are able to assess whether we are making an impact in terms of the areas that led to the intervention. Safe to just inform honorable members that it is very difficult to manage the political interface aspects during the intervention, and that the intervention team mainly confines itself to administrative issues, but provides reports to the MEC in terms of the need for political intervention where warranted. In terms of Matlosana, despite that the Executive Council of the province took a resolution in April, the intervention has not commenced to date. When the intervention was introduced to the municipality, a team of three chartered accountants, including the former business executive of the Auditor General, to deal with the financial problems in Matlosana, because 139B of Matlosana only relates to financial responsibility or the executive function responsible for finance. Matlosana was unable to pay its creditors such as Eskom and Medval Water Board for a long period of time, to the extent that Eskom issued a notice to black out the entire municipal jurisdiction where it serves. The provincial government had intervened, including the office of the Premier, to ensure that there is expeditious resolution of outstanding payments to Matlosana by government debt, and of the 980 debt owed to Matlosana, only 39 million was government debt, which we are facilitating, and we are positive that we are assisting Matlosana to resolve invoices that are disputed by Public Works National or Provincial in terms of health and schools and so on. We experienced serious resistance. The Executive Mayor wrote to the Premier and the MEC, informing them that they do not accept the intervention, that the province did not follow due processes, and that they are not in a crisis as the province alleges. But our assessment to date indicates that the Matlosana still needs urgent financial intervention and assistance. Their book, debt book is now around 980 million. That municipality has got potential to really be one of the best municipalities because of its revenue and its strategic positioning in the province. But we may just report to the committee today that on the 21st and 22nd of August, when the Select Committee on Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs did its oversight visit and assessment of interventions, Matlosana had a parallel process of instructing their lawyers to issue summons against the Premier and the Provincial Executive Council against the intervention, something which Matlosana did not disclose to the committee in session, while they knew that while the committee was sitting on the 21st and the 22nd, already on the 16th of August, they had issued summons against provincial government, which we received later that week. Some of the specific challenges that we are encountering: there are political differences and disagreements, as I indicated, relating to Section 139. Municipalities would want to interpret it to suit their own situation, and they believe that the decisions of the Provincial Executive Council to invoke 139 were not in order, and they did not agree to that. There was also a high level of resistance from the administration side, particularly your municipal managers, who are subject of a lot of allegations and malpractices. The municipalities claim that there is no basis for invoking such a section. The provincial government retains a stance that there has been previous engagement with these municipalities to remedy the situations in terms of challenges that were identified, and no such action was taken. Just in conclusion, as I've indicated, the team in Makwasi Hills is up with its work. We are anticipating that it will be winding down in 6 months unless the NCOP approves a longer period. We are awaiting the final decision of the NCOP Select Committee on Cooperative Governance as at yesterday. In the Tobota, an assessment has been conducted to reascertain the need and the areas of the terms of reference. We are awaiting the MEC to activate the intervention team to start working in the Tobota. The resistance from April to July posed serious challenges also to the department. In Matlosana, as I say, we have not commenced, even if the EXCO decision is still in existence, the intervention has been rejected even by court application. That's briefly the status in the Northwest. I'm sure that these are just key highlights, and we'll be able to interact with the questions and clarities from honorable members. Thanks, Chair.
Chair,
take the questions afterwards. I've got a few. Yes? Umalanga. where the sun rises.
Just also to mention as a concluding point on the Northwest Chair, in this current term of government, Northwest had three different MECs in this portfolio. Mpumalanga, Mr. Basi Strauss, please.
Actually, four. We are sitting on the fourth one.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, colleagues from National, colleagues from National Treasury, colleagues from the provinces. Yes, indeed, it's a privilege for us to come and interact at this level, specifically with regard to the interventions. Honourable Chair, if you will allow me, I will start with your interim remarks that you've made pertaining to the visits to the municipalities and what we've done since that visit, and I will then briefly go to the report that have been forwarded. Since the visit of the committee in Mpumalanga province, I think we've really intensified our support to municipalities. Taking consideration our legislative mandate in terms of Section 105, as led by the Honourable Premier, by Honourable MEC, I think I'm proud to stand up to say that I think we're busy changing the corners in the province pertaining to our support in municipalities. Gone are the days that we do it in a silo approach. There's good collaboration between COCTA, Provincial Treasury, MISA colleagues, as well as the deployees from National Treasury, and not leaving out the district municipalities. All of this have started since the Honourable Premier have called the Local Government Summit, and we've reviewed the current status of municipalities in both KPAs, financial, specifically financial management, followed by the service delivery in the municipalities. In the summit, what we've done with the municipalities is to categorize all our municipalities in three different categories, considering the status of the municipality and the challenges that the municipalities are experiencing. During that summit and concluding then the categorization of the municipalities, a comprehensive support framework was developed in terms of the categorization of all those municipalities. All our efforts, all our support in the municipalities currently, as I indicated previously, we will not provide support to municipality at the ad hoc basis, but it's in terms of the development of the support framework that we've developed. And then our colleagues, our sector departments is then also included, or they requested to include all the support in terms of the APPs, where it will be well monitored by the PCF forum. I'd just like to indicate that following then also the audit outcome that we received from the Auditor General, specifically looking into the deterioration of audit outcomes, special emphasis was put by the Honourable Premier to call in every municipality and have a look into the issues that was raised by the Office of the Auditor General, review the audit remedial action plans, and then there's a monitor mechanism put in place in the province to follow up on the implementation of the recommendations. We've made mistakes in the past. By supporting municipalities, it's a quick win to develop the audit remedial action plans. But where we fell short in the past was where we actually implement those audit remedial action plans and how we monitor the progress that's been made by municipalities. I can report that during the month of June this year, a follow-up summit was recalled where the Premier then summons every municipality to come and share with us the progress made. Following that summit, a verification process was conducted. I'm saying that today, after that summit had been conducted, we rolled out and intensified Section 105 of the Assistance Act pertaining to the support to municipalities. As of yesterday, we just handed over in three municipalities in the province support teams that can look into the issues that are bothering the municipalities. The support teams included then also, once again, employees from MISA, employees from National Treasury, the employees from Provincial Treasury, as well as from COCTA, so that we can proactively address the issues as raised by the municipalities in terms of our assessment that we can address those issues before we even can look into the formal interventions. I'd just like to say that the two interventions that's been reported today formally, so in the report, Emalahleni Local Municipality and Bushbuckridge Municipality, is not just a matter of overnight decision by our political leadership, but it was through this process that I've just indicated briefly that the decision was then taken to formally intervene. Reason being, The reports that were submitted to Provincial National Treasury as well as to COPTA was misleading. If we look into the report of Emalahleni Local Municipality, we look at the deterioration of service delivery, we look at the total collapse of the financial management in that municipality, due to the fact that us, national and provincial, were misleaded through the incorrect reporting, we never understood the extent of the deterioration of the services as well as financial management in that municipality. Briefly, if we look into the four findings in Emalahleni Municipality, as I indicated earlier, infrastructure and service delivery totally collapsed. I think honorable members as well as our colleagues, if they followed the news, they would have seen that Emalahleni was recently, not only recently, but on an ongoing basis in the news pertaining to service delivery. If we look into the issues pertaining to the capacity, there was no capacity. It was totally disintegrated. Financially, they were at the point of total collapse. Irrespective of the fact that National and Provincial Treasury advised the municipality that their budget have totally been unfunded, at the time of the draft budget, the municipality stood with over 200 million deficit on the budget, and therefore then the municipality's failure to implement recommendations by both those entities. Further, then there was a total breakdown of trust from the communities into the municipality, and the political leadership at that stage then took the decision to intervene. The intervention was mainly, as I indicated, financially, as well as to look into the status of service delivery and to recuperate. The progress we've made up to now, we can honestly say after the visit of the National Council of Provinces in the municipality, where all stakeholders were actually involved and participated, there's trust once again placed in the municipality under the leadership of the administrator that was appointed by the Executive Council. The administrator was supported with an intervention team of an engineer as well as a financial expert, supported then also by deployments from National and Provincial Treasury in the forms of employees, and from COPTA side we also supported the municipality on various line functions such as the planning, in the area of planning. Under planning, I indicate the development and review of the IDP, service delivery at the budget implementation plan, and then finally just to align those documents to the budget. I must say that the mistakes we've made in Mpumalanga province previously during interventions were seriously considered when we've done this intervention, both of these two interventions. First of all, the involvement of council during the intervention. Secondly, the matter that some of our other provinces indicated that we need to have a situation that the municipality will be sustainable after the withdrawal of the intervention. Therefore, under progress, I'm not going to go through all of them. Highlights there is, I haven't mentioned it, but Emalahleni was paralyzed with the involvement of unions in the administration. Nothing could have been done in Emalahleni Municipality without the say of the unions. Therefore then, as a matter of importance, we've re-established the LLF forums. We stabilized the low labor situation in the municipality. I'm proud to report back today that whole situation pertaining to the unions, the functioning of the LLF has been stabilized. It's normal working conditions. We're currently working, investing into the culture of commitment from the administration, and good progress has been made in that regard. I think it's due to the involvement of all the managers in the Emalahleni municipality into the decision taking, as well as taking ownership of the turnaround strategy that was developed. Bringing council on board, Section 80 committees was established as advisory committees. The moral committees is still intact, and they're playing a critical role during this intervention, taking then also responsibilities and fulfill their leadership role. I must also say that we've re-established the interaction with the communities, not only through the intervention team, the administrators team, but councillors are fully participating in re-establishing the trust between the council and the communities, and that have worked for us up to now. I'm not going to go too much more under the governance issues, but I want to say under service delivery, when we intervened into the municipality, one of 15 service refuse removal trucks were functioning in that big municipality. Situation has been normalized. All of them is operational currently, and there's also a fleet maintenance plan in place ensuring that service delivery has not been hampered. Water provisioning was the main issue in Emalahleni municipality with a tri-party agreement between Randwater, Department of Water Affairs and the municipality. Good progress has been made to turn around the situation, and I'm glad to report that as we speak there is clean drinkable water, potable water in Emalahleni. The breakdown of the services from time to time, we're experiencing it, but it's under a controlled environment, and therefore we can say that the service delivery has been reinstated to an acceptable situation in Emalahleni municipality. There's areas of improvement. I must report and must be honest with the committee. We're still experiencing serious sabotage from within some of the areas of administration in hampering the service delivery in the municipality, but we are addressing the situation, and the police has even been called in, and there are certain cases that's currently under investigation. Electricity supply was interrupted about 20% of the time on a monthly basis in Emalahleni, and that has also been corrected, and as I indicated, it's 100% under controls. Electricity plans for improving been made, immediate focus on immediate problem solving or problems occur. That is briefly on service delivery. I must just say, and I think it's necessary to share it with the committee, Emalahleni total fleet management system disappeared or disintegrated in Emalahleni. We found most of the fleet disappeared in that municipality prior to the intervention. People sold the vehicles. Vehicles were scattered all over. The fleet manager didn't know where the fleet was standing. And then an investigation was conducted, and as we say is we've reinstated the fleet management, and most of our vehicles have been recovered, although in a state that it's not functional currently. We are working towards getting them functional again. If we look into the financial sustainability of the municipality, creditor payments at the time of the intervention stood at 346 million. If we look at the debtors, 79% total outstanding was 981 million. If I go through my report, honorable members will realize why. If we see that 37,000 households were not metered in Emalahleni municipality when we started the intervention, therefore then a concerted effort to put meters, to start a program to have all users in Emalahleni municipality metered, billed, and then held accountable for the payment. We must also say that utilization of the contractors ad hoc basis, totally outside the supply chain management environment. There were no supply chain management units in place. As a matter of urgency, that was reinstated. Training was provided by provincial treasury, and that all procurement in Emalahleni municipality is currently conducted under a controlled environment. If we look into the deterioration of the audit outcome, the reasons for that, multiple. I think the management letter of Emalahleni municipality was over 200 pages. It's received from the Office of the Auditor General. All the aspects were taken in consideration in developing the audit remedial action plan. For that purpose, financial experts, as I indicated earlier, from various sector departments were deployed and also to support the municipality in addressing the issues from the Office of the Auditor General. Earlier indications or the latest indications on interaction with the MEC, with the municipality, all indications is that they will go back to a qualified audit opinion for the year under audit as we speak. Before I move on to Bushbuck Ridge, I must say, and I must compliment my political leadership for the role that they play. To be honest, to say that I think my MEC is more in the two municipalities where the interventions are taking place than is in his office, and that's for a good reason. And we see and we get the benefit on the ground of the involvement of the political leadership from the Premier's office right through from the Honourable Premier to our MEC as well as other MECs, and the role they're playing in ensuring that this intervention is a success. If we quickly briefly go to Bushbuck Ridge municipality, two areas which necessitates the interventions. First of all, also a financial deterioration. Secondly, it was also issues pertaining to service delivery, with the emphasis on water provisioning. I must say, on the intervention, on the financial intervention, National Treasury was very prominent in supporting us in the intervention early in the year already. When the problems were identified, National Treasury with a delegation moved into the municipality and developed a financial turnaround strategy. That was well supported by the Provincial Treasury as well as colleagues of COCTA, as I said, concerted effort, and that plan was then later on approved by the Council for implementation. A joint team is now currently in place between Provincial Treasury, colleagues from National Treasury as the deployees. The district municipality and our department is monitoring the implementation, and not only monitoring, doing the verification on the implementation of the recommendations, because that is where we fell short in the past, but we've got a hands-on approach to support the municipality with it in a financial turnaround strategy. I'm not going to go through all the detail pertaining to the financial status, it is in the report, but I want to say that on service delivery, I said that the emphasis was on water, specifically water provisioning in the Bushbuck Ridge area. For that purpose, I want to say that the tri-party agreement, also same as with Emalahleni Municipality, utilizing the expertise of the Rand Water, as well as the Department of Water Affairs, same agreement is underway to be signed for Bushbuck Ridge Municipality, although the work have already been started. I can report that the Eikenhoek bulk line has been completed for the municipality. That will assist tremendously putting water in the taps, articulation. That was done previously, which led to non-provision of bulk, not led, but which couldn't give the people the required water due to the insufficient bulk supply. They have been addressed through this exercise, and I think the progress that we're making is very satisfactory in the Bushbuck Ridge Municipality. There's one critical issue, and that's the outstanding amount of debt to the Bushbuck Ridge Water Board. They currently owe the Bushbuck Ridge Water Board over 200 million. And with the support of Provincial Treasury, which the whole idea of honoring this outstanding debt, there is discussions with Bushbuck Ridge Water Board, and it is part of our financial turnaround strategy to address these issues. So there's currently ongoing dialogue in agreeing on the repayment of the outstanding water debt in Bushbuck Ridge Municipality. I must just say in summary that following the visit of the National Council of Provinces, interacting with all sectors, there was, a level of confidence in the way that the interventions have been conducted in both these municipalities, specifically with the involvement of all sectors, business sector, the residents, political parties all over. So we are feeling we are this time on the right track. We will not follow the route of the Mukondo municipality, which was an embarrassment for the province in the past. But Honorable Chair, through you, I think this is a report pertaining to the Mpumalanga province, and I will stop there. Thank you so much.
Mrs. Majid.
Chair, we're mindful that we're over time, but we would like to brief the committee on the bill very quickly. Eastern Cape on slide 30, just for your noting, that intervention is going well. The province is confident that it will be reviewing or withdrawing the intervention in Kloma local municipality shortly. We would like the committee to note the slide under section 4 under the additional support measures. It's part of just recapping what the provinces have already spoken to and some broader things that we are paying attention to from a national perspective. We would like for the moment to zoom into section 5 and conclude Sheila Hughes from our national department team in the Intergovernmental Relations Unit will briefly attend to that part.
It's moving because it's broken there. morning, Chairperson, Honourable Members, colleagues. I'm just addressing the slides concerning lessons learned as we have been hearing from our colleagues over the last 2 or 3 years, which helped us in identifying what were some of the issues that needed to go into the bill to make the bill address some of the weaknesses in our previous regulatory and implementation regime. So just beginning with some of the broader comments. The limitations of Section 139 interventions, we had difficulty interpreting what is an executive obligation. And this came up both for Section 100 and Section 139. And it was easier to interpret an executive obligation for municipalities because these are more crafted in Chapter 6 in the Constitution. They're more carefully crafted in the White Paper on Local Government, and they have lists in schedules and in legislation. So that is something that we have sought to define more closely. And then the issue is that there's not always clarity about the administrator. Administrator is usually appointed when it's a financial intervention in terms of fee, but that I think one of the colleagues said they're calling them representatives, and that's a very good way because you do need that distance, you do need that objectivity where people are operating in a safer space to report to an administrator. Broadly, the improved information flow is something that as provinces and national we're working on so that we understand what are the trends coming out of recovery plans and review reports from provinces. Moving on, we also found that there's not always directives have been issued. Directives are supposed to be followed before an intervention is launched, and we've had some problems on kind of having full information about whether directives have been issued or not issued, and then we want to clarify in the bill, you know, precisely the procedures for targeted support first, directive second, intervention last resort. The procedures for intergovernmental monitoring may not always be pursued by a province because the monitoring of the intervention. This is largely because of the struggle capacity-wise. We've heard that the NCOP is playing a very useful role, and that really is helping. But just to say that the former DPLG did extensive research into the capacities of departments of local government in provinces, and they are the most underfunded and the most undercapacitated. And probably that's the legacy of not realizing when they were established that the amount of work that they are going to have to do going down the line. But, Honourable Chair, I would really think that's an important issue going forward in terms of the structure of government and the structure of those departments. And the issue, I was very pleased to hear from Pumalanga colleague about the role districts have been assigned regarding assisting in oversight and coordination of matters relating to the intervention, because it's an issue where we've identified that we have a lot of very useful capacity in a district, and we must harness it to help with their original powers of regional coordination, whatever it might be. And then I just mentioned that we are hoping to move towards intervention as a last resort, but this very much depends on the effective implementation and management of a Section 154 approach, as the Chair mentioned at the opening of our meeting. And the IMC Bill does adopt an approach to Section 154, but it's still going to be up to stakeholders in government to advise us whether this is sufficient and whether Section 154 requires maybe its own legislation. It's still an important area to interpret. And then moving on to the bill itself, the actual purpose of the bill is to provide for support and intervention measures to strengthen the capacity of each sphere to fulfill their executive obligations in respect to the oversight and support of municipalities. And this bill covers both Section 100 and Section 139. The particular areas of rationalization between those two areas are that Section 100 executive obligations are not so well determined for us to. We have to have some sort of deficient. If you fail to manage your executive obligation, in what way, how, and what was it? Also that the regulations that we are allowed to create from the legislation in both 100 and 139, but in 139 you have more extensive provisions in the Constitution itself, whereas in Section 100 sort of stops. And the sort of financial recovery and the financial issues are kind of drop off, and that's why we want to try and rationalise the legislation to have kind of synergy of approach between the two areas of intervention. And we've been working with the DPME because the legislation recommends that norms and standards for concurrent functions are determined, because that will help us determine the failure of an executive obligation as well. And this came up as a recommendation of the Limpopo Task Team, Chair, because, as I'm sure you're aware, some of the issues of concurrency were prevalent in that area when the investigators were there, and they made a series of recommendations that we should look at for the bill. The bill, I'm sure you've, honourable members, have received copies of the bill, but just to say that the status currently is it's under consideration by our new minister, and we're hoping that it will be submitted to Parliament, but it may not be able to go this year due to the fact that Parliament is rising in the next couple of months, but it is ready for Cabinet to look at, Chair. Thank you very much.
Honourable Chair and Committee, thank you very much for your patience in indulging us with a more longer presentation. That concludes the end of our input. Thank you very much.
Thank you to Mrs. Majid and her team and the provincial teams. Yes, this committee has got first-hand experience of Section 100 Intervention 1B, because this committee is dealing with the intervention in terms of Section 102C to review it on a regular basis. And we made a recommendation in 2012, in March, April, that Section 103 referred to regulations. There is a desperate need, so this process has started referring to the bill. The government process must go on, although Parliament want to rise on the 8th of November. I say want to rise. There's other realities that we must also deal with. We can't come to a standstill. You mentioned a very important point, Mr. Strauss, and that is a hands-on approach. This is the MFMA. If this act is transgressed, there must be a consequence. And this committee is consistent since 2009 when we started as Select Committee of Finance and Appropriations in the National Council of Provinces. If you break this law, you transgress it, there must be a consequence. Finis and clar. Irrespective of who you are and where you work in the government system, referring to local government. So we would like to get reports again also of the officials that transgressed the law. What happened to them? Vehicles disappeared. Are you getting the money back? It was government property. It comes from the taxpayer's pocket. Then they must pay back. Even if it takes 20, 50 years, they pay back. That's the rule. So just a few points I wanted to highlight. The other one is the roles and responsibility of the mayor. The mayor must do the following, 1, 2, 3, 4, in terms of the act. If the mayor don't do it, he's transgressing the law. I told my mayor in Kamisberg regarding the financial position of that municipality. When you put on the budget on the table, do you take into account your deficit you've got, the overdraft in the bank? What information do you put on the table in a council meeting when you want to pass the budget? the credibility of that information, because it affects the people on the street. All the members, that was the presentations. Let's go to the questions. I think there will be quite a couple of that. Honorable Chan is from the Northwest Province. Honorable Mashile is from Mpumalanga. Honorable Lees is from KZN. And Honorable Faku is from the Eastern Cape. And five of the Joseph Western Cape. In that order, please proceed.
Sir, thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate the report, Chair. Although in the slides there seems to be a lack of progress, and I take note that the presenters were making mention of whatever progress that has been achieved. But what seems to be cutting across is the whole element of political challenges. And I've been hearing this for the past 5 years now. I must indicate I'm very tired of hearing that word. The same like lack of skills and whatever. One thought that the 2011 elections would have somehow put some resolution to the issue of capacity, but it would seem it's still persisting. Now the question I want to ask the DG and his and her team is whether or not there, in relation to these political problems, is there any effort on the side of the department and provinces to engage with political parties concerned on these issues? And if so, what are the details? And if not, why? Why such engagements are not taking place? Because the solution really lies with the engagements with those concerned. Because you are also indicating your limitations here. But you can't just continue to sing that song without engaging political parties as though they don't exist. They are there. And if they are the ones who can resolve these problems, are you taking any efforts to engage with them? Now, when coming to the presentations here made, I take note of the report that was being read from KZN and all other provinces. My question is, with regard to Umzinyathi, with regard to Abaqulusi, there's a point that the council failed to accept the offer to support from the provincial government. I think that was before the intervention. I don't understand that. If you can unpack, what do you mean by council failed to accept the offer? And it goes on to Abaqulusi as well, where there are some failures to comply with Section 139. And this resistance that also is visible in Northwest, where the EXCO will then take this decision, and then we are told that there is resistance by political structures. Surely political structures can only resist by the outside. What matters most are those that are inside. Not that it does not have any bearing, I understand. But I'm saying, when I say what matters is that if the noise is from outside, it might only influence those that are inside, but you still find even the people inside now, those employed, resisting this thing. And the way the departments and the provinces are treating it, it's like we don't have the laws that govern this thing. If a staff member misbehaves anywhere, there should be procedures to instill discipline. But in this instance, everybody has got the guts to come and say, no, I'm going to just report to Parliament that, no, these people are resisting. The question is, what is it that you are doing to maintain discipline? Because there are laws that govern these things. There are rules and regulations that govern the behavior of this, particularly the officials. Because as it relates to councillors and them, then that will be catered for, you know, discussion with the political parties. But with regard to officials, really, I would not understand why no action can be taken. And I know for a fact that at some point in the life of this department, there were times where the department, when provinces would fail, the national department would intervene. You see? And that brought the confidence of the people in the department. Something that it seems not to be happening these days. I don't know why. But the question, I think my question is very clear as to, take a specific one example. In Makwasi Hills, Dr. Motlogelo, you are reporting that the administrator suspended the MM. But I know, until at least this Monday, that MM has been suspended, but he still goes to work and he still do whatever is his functions. Appoint tenders, appoint staff. He totally disregards that administrator. And he is not even having any shame. Even when the NCOP portfolio committee went down, he was part of that particular meeting. He's briefing the contractors in this what you call tender things. Something that exposes the municipality, because if anyone loses the bidding, they can come back and say, but the MM is suspended, but he was overseeing all this process and everything. I'm sure if you can pick up a call now and phone that municipality, he's at work. And that minister is there. And it is not a secret. I wrote a letter to the minister, DTC, alerting him about those things. Nothing is happening. I'm so disappointed. Nothing is happening. The situation, the administrator, I had a meeting with him last week. He is as frustrated as I don't know what. Because he can't do anything. The mayor makes his life difficult, so much so that even that team of administration, they are no longer working as a team, because they are all frustrated. All of them, they are frustrated. The HOD is quite aware of that. But the question is, what is it being done? Such that I made a point in one of the meetings in Northwest that, you know, the moment you talk about this intervention and the bringing on board of the SIU and what, people say, what? SIU? Section 199. You're wasting your time. They will come and go. We are proceeding with what we are doing. It's a big Gomba party there. Everybody is dancing to whatever corruption that they are doing. But what is it that you are doing as a department? Are you saying you don't have a teeth to bite? What is the purpose of these laws that you have produced here to make it easy for the department? Again, in the same Makwasi Hills, you've got so many court orders, with the last one, which I also shared with the minister, where the judge even questioned the appointment of the MM. But nobody talks about it. Nobody wants to take action. You've got these powers of concurrence, and I'm sure by that it does not mean that the department must just agree. It means if whatever requirements are not being met, you can reject and reverse that decision. Nothing is happening. I mean, it's making a mockery. All these interventions is a mock, as far as I'm concerned, because these guys, they continue to do these things with impunity, and nothing is happening. And really, it's quite a waste of time, in my view, if we'll continue to come to this meeting and be told. Because the department today, you are not saying you are failing. You are saying to us, no, we are doing something very good. And I'm challenging you, if there is something good that you are doing, you can't come and tell us that officials are resisting interventions, the councils are refusing to do this. This has permitted it to the staff as well, you see. You should be able to say, with the powers that we are having, this is the kind of resistance that we are receiving, and this is what we have done. But everything is normal. That is why, even after this intervention, those municipalities goes back to square one at a very fast pace. The administrator of the team leaves today. In 2 months' time, they are back to square one. A lot of monies have been used. That is why people are saying, but this section 139, are not working. It's not true that they are not working. They are working. But the question is the sustainability of what you achieve, and you will never achieve any sustainability, DG, I must tell you. As long as if I am a problem at the point of the intervention, you will allow me to stay there and continue causing problems and leave me there with the hope that I would have been a changed person. Never. Because if the municipality collapsed in my hand, logic dictates that you must first deal with me, remove me, and put somebody who will carry the municipality forward. You see? But in the instance of government, such things are not happening. So it's a vicious cycle. It's like we don't know what we are doing. But that's my concern, Chair. And because those are just two of my concerns and questions that I have for this entire presentation. Thank you.
You must, as department, also inform us. How do you want legislation to be strengthened to get it implemented, to take these officials on? Because we can't go on like this ad infinitum when we're heading for a fantastic disaster. And as Honorable Chani said, we're dealing with this since 2009 as this committee when we came, when we were sworn in and established as committees in the NCLP for this period of 5 years. People coming after us, members, we must hand over a stick. Will the complaints be the same until 2019? Then we're not moving. Honorable Mashile.
Yeah, Chair. It's a difficult situation we find ourselves in, and but I think, Chair, what one just needs to raise right from the beginning is that the National Department of COGTA does not have capacity. It doesn't have capacity, and then it is aloof from the provincial departments of COGTA. And the same thing applies to the provincial departments of COGTA as well. They just do not have capacity to do what they're supposed to do. And that's why I think, Chair, even if you hear, you listen to the presentation, they present as if they are inspectors at some other corner and monitoring to tick boxes on each and every municipality, either on a monthly basis or a quarterly basis or annual basis. They report as if they are inspectors, and they are not part of that particular government system to deliver services. It is a bit of a problem from my side, Chair, and I think the major question that should be asked is whether these municipalities, when they submit the reports to them, do they read these reports? Do they talk to these reports? Do they react to the issues that point wrongdoing and failure or collapse of systems? Are they really talking to those things? And what is the purpose of these municipalities compiling reports and submit to them? At the provincial level, COGTA and Treasury, then at national level, COGTA and Treasury, all of them. What's the point of these municipalities having to write reports? Whether we talk about whether Section 32 reports or 71 reports and the annual reports of these municipalities that they are submitting and their budgets and whatever report that they are writing, is anybody reading them making sense out of them and react where there is a need for a reaction. Because surely, Chair, as we have said, I mean, we have on the presentation, the good lady there is talking about the intervention now to be the last resort. But I mean, we have been asking these questions, of course, based on Section 154 of the Constitution, to say, why do we have the Section 139 interventions when Section 154 says that these national departments and even provincial departments needed to find a way of actually assisting municipalities to deliver their services, or to execute their functions, to assist, not take over, to assist them to perform their functions. But this doesn't happen because we are sitting at the corner like inspectors, and a municipality, then you put a wrong today, you put a wrong tomorrow, then it collapses, and then we jump and write big reports now to the MEC for local government recommending an intervention, Section 139. And then after that, when the MEC intervenes and say Section 139, then we rejoice, then we look among ourselves who we can deploy as an administrator to that municipality. We celebrate. Because by the time that announcement is made, we have already identified one among ourselves, whether at the provincial level or national level, you know, to deploy there as an administrator. Why do we do that? Where are we when this particular situation collapses, the financial control starts collapsing, and then the financial statements start showing disclaimers and the rest? Where we are? I mean, some of these municipalities, if you can look at the record from the Auditor General, they've been moving as disclaimers continuously. Some of them, of course, they were qualified and then deteriorated to disclaimers. But then it happens in front of us. Chair, maybe just for 30 seconds, you know, we had a discussion at the school where the secondary school teachers are complaining of their grade 11 students that they are naughty, they are not listening, they don't come to school at the correct time. But then when I ask, what about the grade 8s? They say the grade 8s are sharp. They come in time, in uniform and everything. But now I said, now if these students come at grade 8 being disciplined, but when they reach grade 11, they are ill-disciplined, that means they lost discipline in front of you. Where were you? You did not instill anything. Now the same thing is just the municipalities. They collapse in front of us, Chair. They collapse in front of these officials at the provincial level as well as national level. And I really just want to say, Chair, it does not serve us anything, because at any state organ, when you start changing the leadership, then you must expect a collapse of service delivery or a change of attitude of running that particular state organ. And the more we sustain the leadership in a municipality, the better. The more we sustain, the better. And we should be working a lot more better to make sure that those that are there and appointed and qualified to do the work, and they are supported to last long, so that we don't have the turnaround quite frequently. Chair, I would for the one in Mpumalanga, that's where I come from, Bushbuck Municipality, I pass the gate every day when I'm at home. And in that municipality, Chair, around 4:30 in the afternoon, when the staff gets out of that municipality, you can even think that they are coming from a cinema. Many of them. Many. In my standards, I can say that it is overstaffed. There is a lot of staff that is in there. But then you've got a disclaimer, you've got all sorts of things, papers are not there, are not available, receipts, everything gets lost, and then the auditor cannot get anything. All sorts of things. And I started, I think, you'll remember, Chair, when I sometimes highlighted to you that there is a problem in Bushbuck Ridge. 2011, Kenneth Brown, been communicating with him to say, you know, there is a problem there. They can't pay people. There is a problem there. Can you see, can you send somebody? And then he ended up sending somebody called Jordan. And they've not done anything from 2011 until only late last year now that they were having a deficit of 780 million. It's then that now people started acting. But then it was late. It was late. I've got two reports since 2011 that I asked them to go and investigate. Because when I'm there, I know that they can't pay the Bushbuck Ridge Water Board, and then they have started even asking the Treasury to use MIG funds to pay salaries. They have written letters, direct paper, black and white, requesting Treasury to permission to use MIG to pay salaries. But then you have got Cocta in the province. You've got Cocta in the province. So, Chair, without actually really talking a lot of things, just simply to say that one just needs to call upon our departments of cooperative governance and provincial treasury, national as well of COCTA and national treasury. They just need to be hands-on. They must get people that will visit these state organs that is under them, to actually make sure that things are going all right. They must follow the reports that they are getting. They must follow the reports that they are getting. Ourselves here, at the NCOP, if we are to actually tell you the truth, is that we receive reports from this department that comes here, which we pick up that it is cut and paste and it doesn't reflect the current situation on the ground. And Treasury, National Treasury, will also tell you that now they actually don't trust the reports that they are receiving from the provinces as well as from the national departments to them. They don't trust these reports. Because many of these reports, when you go down to go and look at the service delivery that the report is talking about, then you get something different. Misleading reports that are channeled to the top. And the National Department of COCTA, you'll be receiving reports from Mpumalanga about these municipalities that paint the picture that now everything is now moving correctly. And then you come and present to us here. But please go down there and verify those reports. Then you'll find something different. I mean, we've got Tabachwe. What's happening in Tabachwe? Nothing. Nothing. Just crisis. Nothing. And now, last week, we have been hearing reports about Mbombela. There is Mbombela. Problematic as well. Problematic. And there's a possibility that it may even go to Section 139 as well. But I mean, the report doesn't talk to that. And of course, the other question, Chair, that I wanted, of course, was that KZN to really just indicate to us why the National Department doesn't know about Mtuba to be on Section 139. How does that situation arise as well? Because it can only signify to a particular gap of communication. How can Mtuba be on Section 139 and National Department is not aware, is not sure, or it does not know? And then only now when we are here and then we are told, no, Mtuba is part of this club. How is that possible? So it really creates a problem where people are working remotely and on the basis of reports which are prepared by people that are not trustworthy, and they're painting pictures which is not correct. and making you to misrepresent the true facts on the ground. That's all. That's the call that I just want to make, Chair. Thank you.
To the department and departments, these members sitting here are weekends in their constituencies, and they move around. That's where we pick up the issues. Mondays we are in constituencies. It's a constituency day. We now have 14 days. So we're dealing with the reality when we bring it to committees. And you must please take note of that. Honourable Lees.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the presentations. Without labouring the point, I have to agree with my colleagues about the comments already made, so I won't go on this. And indeed, Mr. Chairman, you're quite right. Three of these municipalities in KZN are in my constituency. And indeed, I visited sewage plants, two sewage plants, last Thursday. And to suggest that Okahlamba, which is now out of administration, is okay, is to miss the point. It is discharging raw sewage into the Tugela River as we speak. Now, I know that's a district municipal function, but the local municipality is doing nothing about it. They just let it happen. You walk into Bergfall, there's water running down the streets, there are huge potholes, but they've got a huge new administration building. It's almost the size of this old assembly building. Brand new, beautiful face brick building. And you tell me it's running okay? No, it's not. Mr. Chairman, it's unfortunate that the inference from the KZN person is that coalition councils are problematic. They are in some instances, but one should not generalize that they cannot, imply that they cannot work. In the Umvoti situation, it's inter-party conflict. It's not between two different parties. And in some of the others, there's that aspect as well, including Mchezi. Mr. Chairman, I'm surprised that the KZN report does not include the fact that Mbabazan looks like it's now going to be incorporated into a greater municipality with Mnambithi. And the same applies, with Mchezi, and Ndaka with Mnambithi. Both in the same district, my constituency, and yet there's no mention of it here as a way out of their situation. I think there are political motives as well, but we're not here to talk about those. But from an administration and financial point of view, Ndaka is a total mess. It's been under administration since 2010, 2009. There might be money in the bank. But I was at a taxi rank there 3 weeks ago. Brand new lavatories, never been used. They locked. People are defecating on the steps. It's a disgrace. Absolute disgrace. I don't know what the administration... I mean, you call them, what, ministerial representatives? I don't understand. What are the councillors being paid money for? What are they doing? I mean, are we too scared to take on these issues, as has been said? Chairman, I don't want to repeat what's already been said. But I mean, for instance, under Mzinyati, it talks about Otugela water, and somewhere else it talks about Otugela water. As far as I know, Otugela water is dissolving, and that the functions are being returned to the district municipalities. That the company has been bankrupt for some time, it's been under provincial administration for some years now. So. You know, why have we been told that that's one of the plans to fix these things? I mean, we're glibly told that disaster relief fund, talking altogether, my district municipality, of $4 million not spent for the purpose. Well, what was it spent on? A Christmas party? Stanley Leitler's gift for his wife? Yeah, it's altogether. It's there. It's it's a new administration since 2011, but the new party in control can't agree with itself. And it just it's just facts and facts. It's got nothing to do with the coalition there. Mr. Chairman, I don't see any real vision of how we get out of these interventions sustainably. Msunduzi is not a success. If we're just looking at money in the bank, then yes, we can say these places are successful. Msunduzi is a mess. It's a mess. People steal electricity. Kids get electrocuted on the wires that run between informal settlements. It's not 3 or 4 weeks ago we had a child killed. It's not a success. Just because there's money in the bank doesn't make the intervention a success. And so I lose hope, because I don't see anything coming out of here saying this is how we're putting it right and making it sustainable. Mr. Chairman, I just as a last one, I'm curious, I'm not sure whether the National Treasury can help me here, but the Free State is not mentioned here. But we do know that the Free State illegally transfers funds to municipalities. Does that have anything to do with the fact that they're not in this report and none of them are in any intervention? Because if it is, perhaps we should change the law and allow provincial COCTA to fund municipalities. Thank you. To bail them out.
Honourable Joseph.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think, Honorable Chair, we are on the same page, all of us. What we are saying is that the departments need to be up in their game. As a custodian of the local government, it needs to be ahead of all of us. There's nothing new in all this intervention. For example, if you talk of NUMA, during the transitional phase, NUMA was under 139 in the Eastern Cape. What have we learned from that experience? We're supposed to be saying, no, the best practice, how we handle that, but it's again 2013 that's under. Even if you can go to the Eastern Cape, to those municipalities that are not under Section 139, all those problems we will find in those municipalities. Political infighting, the speaker is fighting with the mayor, the chief whip is fighting with the speaker, the chief whip is fighting with the mayor, the municipal manager, with the... all those things, they are all... If you can assess all the municipalities, we will find those challenges. And they spill over to the administration, the new trend now to the unions. But the department is not advising us how to strengthen. They must come up with tangible remedies that are working, because now they are not telling anything new. For example, where is the performance management system? If the chief whip is fighting with the speaker, why does the municipality become dysfunctional or collapse? Honorable Joseph and Honorable Liz, they are fighting the mayor or the municipal or the chief whip or whatever, and I'm the municipal manager. Why am I not strengthening my performance and the performance of my administration, regardless of who is fighting, and do things in terms of the law? Why isn't that happening? Where is the performance system there, or is it non-existent in all the municipalities? So those are the things we need to hear, good things, but for now, unfortunately, honestly, there's nothing we can say, we can write home about. These are the things that we've been hearing since, I don't know whether there is institutional memory within the department, because during the transitional phase, these were the challenges. From 2000 to 2006 local government, this is from 2011 up until now, we are hearing this. Because these political infighting are going to be there, maybe for a long time. So, why can you come up and up the game. Thank you so much. Oh, the Matrosana. My question was the Matrosana. The Matrosana, the municipality objected to the intervention. As a result, no administrator was, the administrator was never introduced. So what is the current situation with the Matrosana municipality? I think it's in the northwest of the state, Matrosana. Northwest. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'm covered by most of the points. I just wanted to make sure that we accepted the apology for the minister and the other highly profile politicians, but I just wanted to make sure that the minister and the other DGs have also endorsed this report that was submitted here, that they are aware of the contents, because it does implicate political leadership as well in terms of this report. And I think from their side, we also need to hear some report, Mr. Chair, as their opinion as to how they're going to assist with addressing those points that was raised here today. We have travelled ourselves. I was there in Matubatuba, and from there we went to a place, I think, Masibambani near Newcastle or Giants Castle, somewhere there. And it was clear in front of us while we were hearing, attending the meetings, that there is leadership squabbles, ended up in court, as said, in litigation. And what is the cost of that litigation thus far? Because it's been going on for a long time. So, with all respect, Mr. Chair, I think the departments are very frank and open, direct to us, and I think they are also telling us that there is a role to play from the political leadership as well. And the administration has been caught up since 2011 in many of the administrations, been caught up in that political squabbles. But I think yesterday at our committee's meeting with housing, despite some challenges, it was very clear, housing and treasury, that there's some good progress, and the treasury has actually laid down some strong indicators, as mentioned, that must be followed. And I think the housing department took heed to that, and there were some good progress reports because of treasury's guidance and acceptance. So I'm requesting COCTA to take heed of what Treasury is proposing in terms of the guidance in laying new foundations for good governance, particularly monitoring of reports, regular reports, and address the deviations immediately on a quarterly basis, as the previous members have said. If pick it up early, identify it early, then we can turn the situation around. So that is what I would like to say at this stage. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Joseph, to the national treasury, but also COCTA. On the 31st of March 2013, national provincial government debt to municipalities tallied 3.9 billion rand. Outstanding. It was not paid. The president addressed the meeting in KZN, I think it was last year, where he told national provincial governments to go and pay municipalities. And what happened? This is a situation at the 31st of March 2013. The legislation that exists, is there a problem that it can't be implemented to get this money to be paid over to municipalities? Why can't it be done? So, what mechanisms are Treasury using and COCTA regarding this issue? We want to hear that. Because it's a very, very serious situation to also get local government out of, municipalities out of their financial problems. Late submissions of annual financial statements. I take my municipality, which is my responsibility as a deployee, as a practical examiner and a case study, because we're working on that thing. They told me that, oh yeah, we will be submitting on the 31st of August. Last week when I was there, and I met with the leadership, no sir, we will submit on the 20th of September. And I pulled out this thing. So everyone of you sitting around this table transgressed this. It was very serious. and I'm not going to leave her there. Because they took us for a ride. What the political implications may be, I don't care about. Let it be. But the point is, we can't carry on like this. We can't carry on like that. When AG comes to a province and every year it's the same story. That's the point. How do you turn that around? Then you must look at the monitoring tool of the Department of Treasury and COPCA and the monitoring tool of Parliament. Because then it tells me something is not working. And we must work together to get the thing to work. That's the point. That's the, and you, sir, mentioned the role of the NCOP and what happened after that. That's a very important statement you made. When you sit out of this, outside this institution. That's the role of the NCOP. How do we bring the three spheres then together to get a success story? That's our objective. We're not going to have a formal tea break, so please go and take your cup of tea and go back to your desk. Let me give the opportunity to Mrs. Majid and the rest of the departments to respond to the questions.
I think from the accountant general, the first statement he uttered was that they have actually collaborated on what to report with the department. I think I'll just beg that probably in future we must get their objective reporting, and the department must have its own reporting. Otherwise, then we may not get the true reflection of what's going on the ground. Thank you.
Honorable Chairperson and Committee, we'll try and connect with some of these specific questions. We note the comments, the perceptions, the views, the frustration from the committee with all of us. And I would like to offer some very specific views and reality of where we're at as well. It is true that when there's a Section 139 intervention, we have collectively failed that municipality. We as national COPCA and provincial COPCA. Because it should have been, what should we have done to have prevented it? And that's where I would like to move from accepting responsibility that we are failing in many respects. Institutionally, yes, we are weak. We have limited to no capacity to do justice around providing support for Section 139 municipalities. In all honesty, we have come here in this organized formation exactly to try and tighten up our own monitoring efforts, our own interface efforts between ourselves as national and provinces to get accurate, fresh and current information, right? And what you've seen about whether, you know, we think it's four, a province say it's five or vice versa, is exactly an indication of some of our monitoring weaknesses and the report. And I think for a long time, because of our poor positioning and monitoring and capacity, there's been a hands-off approach, not a hands-on approach in many instances. And that's some of the difficulties we're trying to recover from here. Part of what we are doing now to try and redeem ourselves from that old and unhelpful practice is an agreement that's already emerged between us to say that we need to participate as national in those provincial meetings where provincial treasury, national treasury, the administrator or the person assigned from the MEC's office in certain respects, where we can then engage at that level and not just sit and waiting for reports. The issue around veracity and accuracy of reports is also something that we are hearing the committee on very clearly. The only thing that I, as a public servant, as a committed public servant, can trade on is my integrity. And I would, you know, I would beg of the committee to not perceive any report that we put before you as what, where's the level of truth deficiency. I would see it that, you know, for me, I'm hearing the committee very loud and clear around it's the point that the Honourable Member made. We're aloof. We're seeming to be distant and disconnected, and hence we don't have the real issue on the ground. I think also we're just asking the committee on some of these specific questions. We have come here to answer and report on the support measures for 139. I appreciate that there's a range of broader questions that deals with a range of other things. We'll try and do justice to some of those questions. So let me just zoom in on the political problems. The first question that the Honourable Member from Northwest asked, what are we doing about it so that we don't, so that we stop singing the old same song? We haven't done much to engage in an organized way with all political parties and, you know, them meeting their responsibilities. We've been distracted as an institution nationally. We have had limited interventions around building councillor capacity, and this committee knows well that about 70% of councillors are new, and the level of capacity building required post just induction is quite intensive in order for those councillors to own their responsibility, to behave responsibly, to act out all their roles and judiciary responsibilities. So we're on a very sharp learning curve. I'm offering that not as an excuse, as a reality check about, you know, the ill discipline that's often at the political level as well, that gives license for the ill discipline at administrative level as well, and the two feeding off each other in really unhealthy ways. So we haven't done anything significant yet. Under our current political leadership, we are shining a spotlight on this, and our minister's instructions to us as an administration team is saying, hold everyone accountable. Have stricter enforcement of our laws. One of our main weaknesses that we acknowledge, we're just out of a 3-day strategic planning session, is that we as National COGTA is not doing a good job at all about implementing our very own legislation effectively. And that is something that's top priority for us now going forward to implement. And I hear that as a main frustration from this committee as well, and the example being used about the Municipal Finance Management Act, but there's also other important pieces of legislation that we must do much better on. In terms of the Northwest and KwaZulu-Natal, we will speak more specifically on the questions posed there. I just wanted to pick up on one or two other things, and then I'll come back at the end as well in case I've missed something. About the verification of reports, I do want to say, because we did not have an organized way and a tested system in place yet of not just getting the reports but interacting with the reports, I've recently used the example with us doing our own introspection as a national department to say, where's our weaknesses and what are we going to do about it? In our strat planning session that our minister led this past 3 days, where we said that one of the good practices that we need to learn from is that, and the point that you made, Chair, at the beginning as well, to saying, you do your analysis before you go to the ground. Right? Similar to National Treasury that has teams of analysts in the back rooms that interrogates the reports, that interrogates the data, that look for the veracity and stuff. We as a National Department of Cooperative Governance don't have that wherewithal. And it's our own fault, we need to fix it. We can't just say we don't have it and therefore it's okay to go on in a mediocre way. Right? But that's a major deficit that, you know, allows us not to perform to expectation. So we go to the ground for information gathering. And the absence of quality analysis is often missing, right? So I'm so alive to the call that the honorable member is saying, we need to get on top of our game, because I hate being part of a losing team, you know, and constantly coming here and being whipped for all the things that we don't do right. Right? So clearly, it's not, you know, satisfactory going forward for us as officials as well. But we would also...
Can I just come in here? Did you receive all our committee reports since 2009? Because that's part of analysis.
No, I have not, but I would want to make sure I leave here with it, sir. I would also want to just say the honorable member from Northwest was... due disappointment spoke about the communication that was rendered to the minister and no response. So I beg you and you know, to allow me to ask you if, as a last attempt, if you could give me copies of that again, I will make it my personal duty to ensure that you get the due response to it that's required. I'm not certain whether it's been delivered to the current political principles or the former political principle of this portfolio, but in transition, sometimes things get lost, not as an excuse, but I would hate for us as a department to fail you in that way as well, to not even honor your communication and to give a substantive response, and for us to apply ourselves to the issues that you have raised in your communication to the ministry. I'm going to just pause there for a second and ask KwaZulu-Natal first and then Northwest and then Mpumalanga to talk about some of the other specific questions that's been raised.
Thank you, Chair. I think the first question with regard to Abakalusi Municipality and the refusal to accept the support, the Honourable Member was... I note the comments and also the sentiment that it's quite strange that municipalities under distress fail or refuse to accept support. The problem is that local governments, you know, the attitude with most municipalities is that we're a separate sphere of government, and even with support, you get resistance on the basis that they are a separate sphere of government, they have their own institutional integrity, and we as the province, where we identify that there are challenges. And in fact, just to go back another question to the previous question about political, whether there were any efforts to engage with political parties, where there are issues in municipalities that stem from political differences or where there's dysfunctionality of council, the province does engage the council. In fact, not political parties as in structures, but the council itself. There have been instances where political parties don't want to meet together, so the councillors were met separately, or the councillors were engaged separately. And we have had positive results in some instances, but in many instances, there were no results. So we do engage with councillors where there are issues, and in some instances, for example, just recently, Umlalazi Municipality, we were able to dissipate a bigger problem. When it came to the support at Abakalusi Municipality, and here again I raise the fact that before the intervention was even resolved upon, the department did engage the municipality to say to them, or the council of this municipality, to say that you are transgressing, you do not have a top structure, there are serious financial problems. In terms of the Systems Act, you may request the NEC to second individuals to your municipality. Please make use of that option. And there was no interest. And as a consequence of that, and as a result of that then, there was a recommendation made to the provincial executive to intervene in this municipality, which then did happen.
I'm not going to say anything else with regard to the comments that was made by the Honourable Member. As I said, we do take note of it, and in fact, I agree with everything that you said. Moving on to the other comments regarding the successes of the interventions, and particularly around Okhotlamba and Msunduzi Municipality, we note and we accept the fact that there are still challenges in these municipalities. However, those indicators or those reasons which gave rise to the intervention in the first place, those indicators have been met to a large extent and to a point where the decision was made that the municipality is no longer, or it's no longer necessary for the municipality to be subject to a Section 139(1)(b) intervention. However, the monitoring and the support to the municipality needs to be intensified, and there must be a plan in place. I'm accepting that there are still challenges, like there are in more than 40 or 50 of the 61 municipalities in KZN. There must be action plans to deal with that, and there are. In terms of the capacity of the district, that is a serious challenge. And you've heard that Uthakela Municipality is subject to a 136 discretionary intervention, where all of these, their capacity constraints, the challenges, the functionality of committees, so on and so forth, are all being addressed in terms of the recovery plan that's in place. But we do note your comments, and as was indicated by the colleague from National, when we were requested for a report, we were requested to provide information on the reasons for the interventions and the support that is currently being provided to intervention municipalities. So information and a report was not crafted around the successes of the intervention, the progress of the intervention, and the status of the intervention currently. But that is available if required. I'm not too sure if there are any other questions, if I've missed out any. We can come back. Thank you.
Thank you once again, Honourable Members. It's indeed true and correct that Honourable Chani indicates his knowledge and his presence at his constituency in Makwazi Hills municipal area. When the administrator raised challenges of that municipal manager, I, in writing, authorized the services of the state attorney to assist the administrator to obtain an interdict against the municipal manager or any other action that the municipal manager is contravening. And the administrator has got full support and resources in terms of taking that action. We will liaise with him further to find out if the program really persists, because our records indicate that he is now on suspension, although after suspension he came to municipal offices in the disguise of requiring certain documents in his office, and that he contravened the condition of suspension, which is prior approval of the administrator before, and that constitute one of his charges. Charge sheet has been served to the municipal manager, constituting 8 major charges by the administrator and the investigation team. The administrator has not referred matters or allegations of corruption or non-compliance to the SIU. He briefed directly the commercial wing of the crime unit, which is the Hawks, and there are matters already investigated with dockets with the DPP for decision in terms of the administrator's last report, which report he also presented to the Select Committee on Cooperative Governance and Transitional Affairs. We acknowledge that the situation is not easy in that municipality, and that the mayor offers no cooperation at all, and that in a normal sense, the mayor should be working very closely with the administrator as part of the skills transfer and the manner in which he must continue to exercise oversight post the intervention period. We anticipate that, as it was done in Madibe local municipality, as soon as the administrator left, the council and the officials reversed all the recommendations of the then administrator until the minister in the province appointed another team under Section 154 to assist Madibe, which team is not given any support. the three recommendations were placed before that council for it, among others, to take action against allegations committed by the municipal manager. Council, on three occasions, postponed the meeting, and when they met 2 weeks back, they resolved contrary to the guidance and the directive of the ministerial report itself. So it's a major political challenge that our political principals are aware of. So that challenge might be encountered in Makwasi Hills upon the termination of the intervention. There are also the issue raised about the validity of the appointment of municipal manager in Makwasi Hills. He is one of the municipal managers whose appointment is irregular. Indeed, in the case of the one section 56 manager against the municipal manager, the judge made a finding of fact that the appointment of the municipal manager itself is wanting. Well, there was no effective judgment in terms of its validity otherwise, but the judge did remark about the appointment process being not in accordance to the legislation. What we then did, we compiled a comprehensive report for the MEC, advising that all non-compliance appointments on Section 56 or municipal managers or any other appointment required in terms of the Systems Amendment Act must be one application to the High Court seeking declaratory order to invalidate those that are not in order. The declaratory order would come as a form of a legal opinion but in a judgment form, because we'll have a judgment that enables us to take one comprehensive decision. That record and decision is with the MEC, and we'll be pursuing it along that line. In terms of the issue relating to the Matlosana, the current situation, after the NCOP visit on the 21st, 22nd August, the committee advised that the MEC and the minister must review the situation with a view to engage with the Provincial Executive Council, because this is its decision, whether they want to review the intervention or they want to review the terms of reference of the intervention. The decision is at that level, but it is now constrained by the fact that there is a court process where Matlosana has now litigated against the provincial government, and we may also be constrained by the principle of sub judice, therefore unable to deal with the merits and demerits of the problem. But I believe intergovernmental relations need not be absolutely constrained by the matter that is pending before the court, but that's the status of Matlosana as of now. On the side of the finances, it is not showing any improvement. As I indicated earlier in the presentation, its ability to recover own revenue is a problem. Of the 980 million owed to Matlosana, as I said, only 39 million is government debt. Over 847 million is household and business debt. There are service providers that are appointed in that municipality as debt collectors. We wanted this team of chartered accountants to get into the details, the bolts and the nulls. Firstly, to assess the service level agreements that have been signed, to assess whether there is value for money for these contractual arrangements between Matlosana and its service providers. And when we do that with mere 154 support, our authority to make financial decision is limited in that municipality. Hence, we had wanted to go in a section 1391B, where we'll also have authority to make certain decisions relating to expenditure, relating to revenue management, relating to personnel in those divisions. We will still be pursuing that objective because we believe that things have not changed in Matlosana. They remain the same despite their resistance to the process. Other issues that are resistance at political level, of course, we do inform and brief and make reports for our political principals for their necessary intervention, because it becomes issues above our salary grade. In terms of the capacity of the department, it's quite correct, honorable members. We are not resourced to fulfill our mandate efficiently. If we need hands-on support and teams that are district-based and local-based and work with these municipalities in a more frequent manner to ensure that our monitoring and evaluation can also detect challenges well in advance, we need to revise our structure, which we have done in partnership with the Office of the Premier and the Ministry for Public Service and Administration. The challenge is that we will still be approaching Treasury for additional funding to the additional capacity we have put to the structure. So it's a very, very serious challenge, which would also really rely on your guidance in terms of other levels of governance for us to be accorded the necessary resources to fulfill our mandate. The reality is that we are not fulfilling that mandate 100%, given the legislation that we need to administer. In terms of the issue relating to intergovernmental relations as well, MECs, albeit have changed four times in the current term, have a standard forum called MUNIMEC, Municipalities and MECs. That forum is constituted by all political leaders and administrators in municipalities, in Department of Local Government and Provincial Treasury, where there's interaction on issues relating to audit action plans, compliance issues. Although the turnaround of that forum is consultative in nature, there has been attempt to engage municipalities on their status and encourage them to turn around where they are shown, because in every MUNIMEC, as we'll be doing on the 19th of September, we present status of each municipality in terms of compliance issues, in terms of audit action plans. We invite the Auditor General, we invite all other stakeholders, Treasury, who are part of the processes of assisting municipalities. But that assistance, as I'm saying, it's limited to consultation, it's limited to persuasion, and we're trying to ensure that we play our role in terms of support. And finally, government debt. It is a standard item on the COGTA National MINMEC. It is an item that has now been submitted to Provincial Executive Council through the cluster as a standing item for government departments to account on outstanding debt to municipalities. There is a team established by the Premier, led by myself and my counterpart in Treasury, which sits with municipalities and departments that are disputing invoices to attend to the areas where there's indifference, but to effect payment to those where there are no disputes. There are municipalities in the province that are now not owed by any government department, but there are still many others that are owed, and we are now presenting that item to the Executive Council on a monthly basis so that the Premier can hold a team accountable to the outstanding debts to municipalities. And the other comment that the Honourable Chair made was the submission of the annual financial statement. Every year on the 31st of August, both MECs for finance and local government have now made it a ritual. All municipalities assemble in one area with the AG, with Treasury, with local government, and submission is effected. There are teams appointed by Treasury that assisted municipalities on training and compilation of annual financial statements. That team is not 100% effective, because where sometimes they need skills transfer, you get acting CFOs, or you've got one good CFO and a weak support structure on the line below him or her. So there are those personnel issues that we are trying to grapple with, but submission 100% we have been able to reach. We want to go beyond 100% submission. We want to go to actual content of turning around the audit opinion, because submission is one thing, presenting a good audit outcome is another. So on the level of submission, yes, we do comply, but we really want to go beyond that. Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. On the very first question addressed by yourself pertaining to the consequences, I must report that during the intervention, within the interventions and outside intervention municipalities, there's already consequence management in the province. Insofar as we speak now, I can report that as we speak, action has been taken against four municipal managers in the province, specifically looking into the issues of non-compliance with the Municipal Finance Management Act, directly linked to the audit outcomes, as well as some other areas. As we speak, three CFOs, action is currently underway against those CFOs. Some of them is also contravention of the Municipal Finance Management Act and relevant other legislation. I must just say, on Emalashleni, as the Honourable Chair have requested me specifically on the fleet that have disappeared and that stuff, on the second bullet of the report under the progress, we are in the process with investigations, detailed investigations on all the issues and all the areas of maladministration, corruption, fraud, or whatever reason it is in Emalashleni to support them. I must say, to date, four officials of Emalashleni municipality have already been arrested, specifically with interference in the electricity provisioning, illegal connections, as well as some of them have been arrested for illegally removing some of the IT and equipment in the IT environment, preventing us for the investigation. So there is currently progress. Must report through you, Honourable Chair, that in the last summit that was conducted in the province by the Honourable Premier, as I have reported, it was made very clear that there will be consequences for non-compliance to the Act. Following that summit is then the action that was taken against the MMs that I've indicated and some of the CFOs. The Premier was very serious making the statement insofar as getting written confirmation from municipal managers and executive mayors explaining to the Honourable Premier why action should not be considered pertaining or following the deterioration of the audit outcomes. And there is then, as I reported, then the action that have been taken pertaining to consequences that led to or failure to implement. Honourable Chair, I just want to go then through some of the other questions. I want to link up with my colleague from Limpopo province. We also got a very... Northwest. Active IGR structure in the province. At one stage, it was vulnerable, but with our Premier have been revived, the MINMAC, the PCF structures. I've indicated in my presentation the PCF, the Hotla that was conducted specifically with a purpose looking in local government as well as the performance of local municipalities. Some of the members have indicated then where are we standing pertaining to performance management in our municipalities, and this is at a high level. The initiative from our political leadership to make it clear to the municipalities that they will be monitored. That was followed after we started the process of mid-year performance review sessions with every municipality in the province, where we can at the early warning system establish the status, establish the challenges within those municipalities, and then give effect to Section 105 support. A question was raised by the Honourable Member from my province, specifically from the Bushbuck Ridge area, supporting Tabatsfield Municipality. I want to use the opportunity to share some of the information with the committee. I've indicated in my presentation that we are putting concerted effort pertaining to Section 105 support, the assessment, as well as then the support to municipalities. In our province, Bushbuck Ridge, Tabatsfield Municipality, Honourable Member have mentioned Mbombela Municipality, Musukalikwa Municipality, and Governor Mbeki Municipality is currently receiving, as we indicated, hands-on support from both COCTA, Provincial Treasury, as well as our National Department through the involvement of the MISA experts. Those are municipalities that have been identified with which are experiencing serious challenges. For that purpose, yesterday, with the Honourable MEC, we handed over for Musukalikwa, acting MM, due to the action that was taken against the previous MM. We handed over a support team to assist the acting MM. This is not an intervention, as we indicated. It's just a support mechanism for the municipality, a financial expert as well as a technical expert, supported also by officials from both sector departments, all the sector departments that I've mentioned earlier. In Governor Mbeki, the support that we rolled out to Governor Mbeki is specifically in the financial and technical areas. Specifically, the technical is sanitation. Two wards in Governor Mbeki are struggling with sanitation challenges for quite some time now. So we provided support in an effort to overcome those challenges. Mbombela Municipality also is the reason of action that was taken after the assessment of the political leadership in the status of the municipalities, the MM. We have replaced the MM, where there's currently action being taken against him, with an acting MM. We're in the process deploying an MM as well as a technical expert for Mbombela Municipality. Tabatsfield Municipality, to report that the MM have been removed from the municipality. There is investigations that we currently conducted. There will be action taken once we receive the report, if it's necessary. National Treasury is involved with a deployee in Tabatui Municipality, as well as there is a deployment from Provincial Treasury in the role of an acting CFO in that municipality, with our understanding with the current status of the financial affairs and the challenges that they are experiencing. As we speak, there's a comprehensive team that do an assessment of Tabatui Municipality, which will be presented to our political leadership, and whereafter we will then roll out hands-on support also to Tabatui Municipality. So, Honourable Chair, it is proactive arrangements, it's proactive steps that we are taking in avoiding an intervention. That is, as I indicated, our support mechanism to the municipality. I want to report that in Mpumalanga Province, we also established a debt collection committee. We've covered major grounds pertaining to the collection of debt. In the previous financial year, we collected, my memory serves me correct, over 150 million already that have been deposited, repaid to municipalities. Current year to date is over 50 million that we've collected. There is still serious challenges pertaining to the debt collection. If we look into the unallocated revenue accounts as situated within the municipalities, the non-reconciliation of such accounts, that led to the incorrect reporting indicating what the outstanding debt is, while the funds have already been transferred from certain debt, from certain government departments to the municipalities, but the reports reflect a non-receival of such. So with the task team, we do a reconciliation of every municipality unallocated revenue accounts, making sure that the accounts hit the correct, the deposits hit the correct account, and that assisted us tremendously. The second challenge that we are experiencing now, municipalities, is the biggest debt currently is in relation to schools that's owing municipalities. Schools is if I can put it like that, we need support in that regard, simply because the Department of Education is transferring these funds to the Section 21 schools. Therefore, we are struggling to get the schools to honor these outstanding accounts. There is, in our debt collection forum, we have discussions with the Department of Education, because we strongly feel, if we look at the municipal, the Public Finance Management Act, there's certain responsibilities that coincide with transfer of funds. There's certain reports that's been required for audit purposes, and we feel that there's currently not sufficient oversight over the utilization of the transfer funds to the schools, which make it very problematic for us to collect the funds from the various schools. So, Honorable Chair, we are working towards, with hand in hand, with the Department of Education, with the Department of Finance, as well as the audit unit within the Office of the Premier, to see that we actually strengthen our oversight of the utilization of the grants that's been transferred to the schools, so that we can address this outstanding debt. It is a challenge just to cut the school's electricity. We've tried it, but we know it's not always the correct option, but we try to get the correct way to deal with this outstanding debt. I want to say currently in the province, just over in Bushbuck Ridge, for instance, is contributing the largest chunk of our government outstanding debt, over 900 million, of which over 777 million is disputed due to the fact that that municipality implemented incorrect property rate tariffs, and they overcharged the government departments. We've picked it up in the previous financial year already. We've made serious recommendations to municipality. Unfortunately, the failure to implement our recommendations, but luckily we, under the intervention, we currently reviewing the tariff structures of the municipalities. I just want to say that on the submission of financial statements, Honorable Chair, for the first year in quite some time, Mpumalanga Province, all municipalities have submitted financial statements in time. That was through the concerted effort from our Honourable Premier, our MEC, and the Executive Council, with a hands-on approach going towards the preparations for the submissions and the implementation of the audit remedial plans. Hopefully, if we cross our fingers and we get blessed, we will see an improvement on the quality of those financial statements, because that is our very next challenge. But with our support that we rolled out, with the support of National Treasury, with the deployees, we definitely are positive that we might see an improvement in the audit outcomes in the next release after November. So, Honourable Chair, that is just short. If I've skipped out something, I stand to be corrected.
To just reflect on if there's any data that you have about the staffing levels in Bushbuckridge, there is the impression that it's grossly overstaffed. And also, how are you dealing with verifying reports, given that you have previously talked about misleading reports?
You've got a long breath. It's a long awesome. You want some shortcuts for it.
I'll take shortcuts. Thank you, Honorable Chair. We are definitely aware of the situation pertaining to the staffing in Bushbuckridge Municipality in the detailed turnaround strategy. It's one of the issues that we are currently addressing with the district, with SALGA. We are reviewing currently the structure, and we're looking into, if I can put it like that, right-sizing the municipality. If you've got surplus staff, it's not as very easy to just let go of the staff, so there is procedures, there's processes that you have to follow, but we started with the process, and I think Bushbuckridge Municipality will definitely benefit. Just for the interest of the committee, Bushbuckridge Municipality, if I look at the ratios, is currently standing just over 20% of the budget, operational budget, is in relation to remuneration. So that is still within the ratio, but it's not saying we can't cut and we can't right-size the municipality, but we are busy with it. Correctness of reports. Honorable Chair, in my presentation, I've also indicated and acknowledged that the interventions was due to inaccurate reports receiving from municipalities. Provincial Treasury will provide you with a report which differs from the report that the municipality is providing itself, and that report that the municipality is providing under signature of the CFO and MM to us for verification process, for reporting process, will then differ again from the Section 171 report for the same process as submitted to National Treasury. To avoid this, we came up with a technical team that, as I indicated, also they do verifications. Unfortunately, with the capacity with COCTA, as well as the capacity of Provincial Treasury, it's very difficult to do a verification exercise on a monthly basis for municipalities. But we revert then to a quarterly review session. We will interact, not only will, we started with the process as technical support to the municipalities, where we do a physical and technical verification of the financial information that's been provided to us. That then led to us to assist the municipalities and as a province to report as one voice. As we indicated previously, we were seriously embarrassed with the inaccuracy of reporting, and then both reports were signed up from the MM as well as the executive mayor, but when we present it, there's always this conflict, which is direct information. So we try with the technical interventions, verifying information, Honorable Chair, to have the report speaking to each other and report on the same totals, if I can put it like that.
There's just one more question that I'll quickly respond to, whether our political principals and DG have signed off this report. Absolutely, yes. We've got a standard practice in the department. Before we come to any oversight committee, the presentation is walked through in detail in a briefing session with our Director General. It then goes to our Deputy Minister and our Minister before it gets submitted.
Mr. Scholes, Iman.
Thank you, Chair. I will clip on my short breath and try to address the three questions raised. The first one pertaining why Free State was particularly excluded from this report. It's because the intervention in Free State, as well as a couple of others in Western Cape and Northern Cape, as well as Limpopo, was in terms of Section 216 of the Constitution, where non-submission of the annual financial statements for a related period of time resulted in the folding of funds of the equitable share, and since then we have received the current financial statements in those cases. So it was not a Section 139 intervention, but a 216. Just on the government debt, it's also, I'd just like to confirm that it is in fact the case on a monthly basis that provincial treasuries, national treasury, and the Department of Public Works are together. We try to isolate those amounts payable. We've made some progress. There are certainly some sectors that's more cumbersome than others. The analysis has also shown that the amounts have improved a little bit from March up to now. The second issue that we do every month, we report to FOSTAD on 30-day payments that's outstanding, and we report to the appropriation account. In fact, 17th of September is the next presentation on that. And then the consequences for non-submission of AFSs. Chair, honourable members, we do see an improvement. Northwest, for the last 3 years, have compiled a full set of financials for both municipalities and the entities. They had a good catch-up for over 2 years. This year, again, presented a full set of financials. We've seen the same in a couple of other provinces, and I think there is some good energy going into that. I hope that we can maintain the momentum in that regard.
Referring to my municipality, Kamiesberg, there was a team of consultants, auditors, and then they were recalled, and a new team was sent in, and that took about 9 weeks. It's one of the results. We spoke to the then Accountant General, Mr. Novalo, about these issues, as well as to Mr. Kenneth Brown. The provinces informed National Treasury about these consultants and when they are recalled, because I believe it's practice that the Accountant General must sign off the appointment of such auditors coming into the municipality, and that's another field to tackle. All the members, thank you. It's nearly 1 o'clock and we have the plenary at 2. A very important point came out. We did introspection. This is Majita as Deputy Director General. So they went for 3 days to do introspection. The point is, we've done that, what now? They can only succeed if you also succeed in the provinces. The national will succeed. The same with National Treasury. We had the Lokotla with the Minister of Finance in 29. I think it was October, if I recall it correctly, regarding an introspection of the National Treasury. Are we still on course? You made a very important point, Mr. Strauss, regarding the political leadership, that all the municipalities submitted AFS statements on the 31st of August, a program led by the Premier. Best practices. Now, if that province can do it, why not the rest? Why not the rest? Speak to each other. And I think that's where the role of MINMEC can also be strengthened. The point of work ethics. The program that the Minister for Public Administration is now rolling out to take the staff in the public administration through a program that I must be proud of my work and what I'm doing. The issue of training. When U.S. Department take officials of municipalities for training, before they leave the workshop, test them. Do they understand what you train them on? Give them a case study. Mark them. Give them a mark. Call it out loudly. If they don't pass it, you don't go home. You stay there. You rewrite it until you pass. You won't get into an aeroplane and the guy sitting behind in the cockpit can't fly the same. You'll get off. That's how serious this issue is. And then the last point that also came out, the continuity of councillors, not to change them every 5 years. It takes time to settle in, to know your job, to understand legislation, the implementation thereof, etc. It's a very important point also for us here at Parliament. We will compile our report and send it through to the... We'll take it through the National Council of Provinces for adoption, and then it will take the route to the Minister. And I want to say to the Minister of Finance as well, Honourable Chani. Honourable Chani is the chairperson of the Select Committee for Appropriations.
Thanks very much, Chair, and thanks for the response from the department. But I just want the DG to take a serious note in terms of the responses or the report from Northwest. I'm still very much concerned. If you hear the length at which the department is taking those efforts, Those are signs of desperation. Just simply to deal with one person, you have to involve the state law advisors, attorneys, you have to go to the courts to interdict. Just one person who has been suspended and he refuses to leave. Now, the reality is that in that municipality, despite all this intervention, that is being frustrated. Even the staff members are being instructed never to cooperate with the administrator or if anybody is going to investigate the MM. It's a clear instruction in writing. You see? Now, you've got two MMs now. The one appointed by the administrator as an acting MM and the one who's resisting the intervention. It's a reality. What will even disturb you? You see, I can tell you stories about that municipality because I'm there every week. Just at the main gate, you've got this private security with these big Tommy guns, like the mafias. They are there every day, 24/7. Sometimes they even refuse the same administrator to enter and his team. At certain points, he will get in and find that the locks are being changed. He can't even have access. He operates from Wimpy nearby, the administrator. You see? So those are the serious things, and they don't only frustrate us and the municipality. They even, you can hear, Mr. Motlogela is frustrated. He says that he's a professional. He can't say I'm frustrated because he's employed to bring changes, not to be frustrated. But the fact of the matter is that he's frustrated. As to whether whatever that they're doing will ever happen is another thing. We understand the dynamics in terms of the politics in the province. But simple admin issues, it shouldn't be difficult for us to act on people who are just there to do other things than what they have been employed for. I'm just sharing this with you, DG, just to demonstrate and belabor my point so that you see the seriousness of the situation there. I'm happy to hear this progress that has been reported, but as to whether it's like that as we speak now is another thing, but we need a serious intervention, quick one, for that particular matter. You see? Because lot of things, some of the things I can't even say in this forum that are happening there. This man has become a law unto himself, and nothing is happening. Nothing. So I would appreciate that perhaps in the few days to come after this meeting, now that we have reported these things and they are on record, something will happen. I have a copy of the letter I gave to the minister. I'll give it to you now as you have requested, and everything that was attached. It was the current minister. It's not the previous one. That's why I was saying I'm disappointed. But I hope that action will be taken, such that the province will not even have to go to that far in terms of resolving what can be resolved in an hour's time if people are serious about the power that they have. You see, I've never heard of a person being suspended, doing everything and nobody's able to touch him. Not unless if there is something that we are not aware of that this man is having on other people. We don't have to go to such conclusions, but it's unheard of. You always get suspended and fight your wars outside, not within. Even the most influential people in politics, they get suspended, they will never go to work. They fight from outside. This small fry of an MM, suspended, he's still there, doing as if everything, issuing instructions, there are letters issued every day, don't cooperate. He even says, this is my municipality, anybody of you can cooperate with this administrator, I'm going to fire you, and I'll use the municipality fund to fund you, use your own money, you won't contest me. That's what he's doing. Mm-hmm. I'm not telling you stories or exaggerating. You know, the beauty of it is that everything that he does, he writes letters. That's how clever he is. He writes letters. He don't say things verbally so that he can contest tomorrow. He writes letters. Thank you, Chair.
No government official is untouchable or above the law. No one. It doesn't matter who you are or what position you occupy. The same to politicians. Because we are accountable to the people outside. They can ask us the question, didn't you see this thing coming in Limpopo? Why the intervention? What did Parliament do? That's why we're calling provincial treasuries every quarter to come and brief Parliament on their fiscal position and spending of departments. And then appropriations kicks in where they zoom into specific departments. That's a new route we take. It was never done like that before. So to strengthen our oversight role. Thank you also for your input regarding the bill. Again, the NCP took the lead and the committee met on the 18th of June. The NA is a bit behind us, but they will have to pick up speed because this legislation must be implemented. And we don't want the Section 100 intervention. We don't want that. Because then it sends out a bad signal about governance and financial management. Honourable members, thank you for your inputs. We're not done yet. We still got a few sets of minutes to deal with, but it's very short. If I can call on your cooperation here. Pardon? Yeah, the departments will be released, so they don't have to sit and listen to this. Thank you for your presence. My experience with Mrs. Majita is she replied within 48 hours. So I know what I'm talking about. Thank you, and also to Mr. Iman from Treasury. Yeah. And the other provinces that are here, enjoy the sunshine of Cape Town while you're here. Honourable members, the minutes of August, it is the 13th of August. Yes. There were two meetings. The one is the 13th of August, time 9:30, where we dealt with the Free State and KZN provinces on their provincial expenditure by different departments. I put to you page 1. Names correctly spelled, etc. On the machine again last, but that's not an issue. Just on page 2, point 2, presentation by National Treasury, the second paragraph, the National Treasury rate concerns that the Department of Health has emerged. My question is, which province? If someone else reads this minute, they won't know which province we are talking about. Is it KZN or Free State? So give more detail there, please, to the Secretariat. Page 3. Yes, sir. This will come out from their presentation, but they can double check that. I put you by 3. Can you get the mover? Honorable Lees moves, the seconder. 1, 2, 3. We're just making a quorum. Thank you. The second set of minutes is also for Tuesday, the 13th of August 2013 at 14:15. Briefing by the South African Revenue Service and National Treasury on the double taxation agreements, page 1, those that were present, etc. Page 2 and page 3, that I went through the minutes, I've got no problem with that. Honorable Chani moves and over these seconds, and then honorable members, Wednesday the 14th of August, we met again with the South African Revenue Service and National Treasury, continuing on the double taxation agreements. Sorry. I put the minutes to the honorable members on the Chani moves and honorable Joseph seconds. The last one, honorable members, is Wednesday, the 21st of August, briefing by the Department of Public Service Administration and the SIU on progress made with regards to the 303 cases investigated in the Limpopo province. Page 1. It's all the names. And then page 2. Honorable Faku moves and Honorable Joseph seconds. Honorable members, then next week we will be in Gauteng on the pre-visits. There will be a meeting scheduled. Mr. Renter, the secretary, will give you the information if you want to tell us now which day.
Thanks, sir. The meeting is scheduled for the 18th of August, or September, sorry.
Wednesday.
It's starting at 5 o'clock. They said the venue will be the Sheraton Hotel where members will be staying. And it's two pieces of legislation, Chair, that means we must have a quorum on that day. 5 o'clock.
I know there's a serious by-elections in several wards in Tokwe, but, yeah. You can leave after the meeting. This is very serious legislation. We've got a couple of bills that's coming to us from the NA that must go through the process. So we seriously need a quorum, and Sri Solani will assist us to sensitize the members, and I will do it from my side as well. Thank you, members. This meeting is adjourned. Sri Solani, you can't say those meetings on that day. The 19th.
Just make sure he's in his Mercedes, so I know which one it is.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's right.